Okay, we'll call this committee meeting to order. This is the Wednesday, April 17th, 2013 meeting of the Transportation and Public Safety Finance Division meeting. A quorum is present, and Vice Chair Kent will be chairing the meeting.
This is the correct order.
So, thank Chair Kent.
All right. Senator Dibble, do you want to start the discussion?
Yes. First, I think, members, thank you for your flexibility and fastening your seatbelts to the extent that you believe in seatbelts and hanging on for this interesting ride that we've been on. I think the first thing we need to do, members, is we need to pull Senate File 1173 off the table. I'll make that motion.
Senator Dibble moves that we take 1173 off the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Motion carries.
Right. I would move the A15 amendment to Senate File 1173. That's in your packet.
Senator Dibble moves the A15 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
And then Madam Chair, I would move the A18 amendment, which will be handed out, and Ms. Boyd and Ms. Berzofsky will help explain the amendment. Parts of it are technical. So that should be coming around, the A18 amendment to the 1173.
Senator Dibble moves the A18 amendment to 1173. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
So, and Madam Chair, just to explain this amendment quickly, as I understand it, the first part just fixes some numbers that hadn't accounted for, some numbers that flow through the CASA formula, for example. We failed to include in the proposal for the new sales tax that would be enacted in the metropolitan area, some dollars that we'd be sending to the Center for Transportation Studies for transit research, similar to what we do with dollars out of Trunk Highway Fund for other kinds of transportation research. Do some encouragement in the corridors of commerce, not earmarking, but some encouragement, and that's on the second page. And then there's some other stuff maybe that I'm not picking up on. Anything I've missed?
Madam Chair and Senators, I think Senator Dibble hit on most of the pieces. I would just point out maybe on line 20 of the amendment, there's a deletion of some rider language. Under transfers for the armor system from DPS to MnDOT, and that was just because the rider double counted amounts already appropriated and that rider was deleted. There's an effective date on line 22 from page 1 of the amendment that affects the changes to motor vehicle leasing sales tax, and that is just to make sure that the intent of the change did not affect fiscal year 13. Okay. I think we've covered, Madam Chair, the bulk of it.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Boyd. Senator Dibble.
All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'll give just kind of the highlights presentation of the bill, then I'll ask Ms. Boyd and Ms. Berzofsky to help us walk through the bill. I didn't warn them that I was going to do that, but kind of like we did last time, though. So, members, in short, what we propose to do in this bill is undertake some reform in our fuel, in our motorized fuel taxes. What we're doing is we're reducing the gas tax by 6 cents. That's 24% on the regular gas tax, not counting the little increment for debt service. And we're enacting a 5.5% gross receipts tax that's paid by the distributor of motor fuels at the wholesale level that may or may not trickle down to the consumer. It's a business decision. Free market competition will determine that. We're taking, of course, the governor's recommendation for an additional half cent sales tax in the seven-county metropolitan area, so that would make a three-quarter cent sales tax in the metropolitan area for transportation purposes. Those dollars would be distributed through a joint certification process to the existing County Transit Improvement Board for purposes, primarily for purposes of making grants for building out the transitway system, so for capital grants. But those dollars would also be used for the operating side of the equation in our regular route bus service and our in our transitways operating. Some additional dollars will be going to the GEARS Committee, which is already established in law, but now they're given a little more authority to make grants for bike and ped and safe routes to school and those sorts of things, as well as working along with CTIB in making sure that the land use plans and the planning that gets done for transitways is done very well, because, of course, cities are represented on the GEARS Committee, and they have the primary responsibility and jurisdiction over economic development, land use, housing, et cetera. We want to make sure we're maximizing those transit investments. For Greater Minnesota Transit, we do a few things. We devote some of our general fund target to Greater Minnesota Transit. We know the identified need to serve the needs in Greater Minnesota with transit is an additional $42 million per year. We don't quite get there in this bill, but we do raise some money through a general fund expenditure. The existing motor vehicle lease tax portion that goes into the CASA formula for the five metro counties and then split with Greater Minnesota Transit, the growth in that goes to the five metro counties into the CASA would go to Greater Minnesota Transit. We equalize the motor vehicle sales tax, which is currently at 6.5%, which is different than the standard sales tax at 6.875. We equalize that up to 6.875. That goes, of course, into the motor vehicle sales tax as designated by the Constitution, 60% for roads, 40% for transit. Presently, we divide that 40% for transit on a 36% and 4% basis. Metro Transit, Greater Minnesota Transit. We changed that to 35 and 5. That does get additional dollars still over to Metro Transit, but some additional dollars to Greater Minnesota Transit, another $5 or $6 million per year. So we get a little over $20 million per year to Greater Minnesota Transit. Of the dollars that we raise with the gross receipts tax, we put about 85%. So those dollars, of course, go into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. They are constitutionally dedicated. Of those that go into the Trunk Highway Fund, we devote a good portion of those dollars to the corridors of commerce. And that's something that we've had some discussion about, and perhaps Senator Jensen, who's been on the ground floor developing that concept, can help us talk a little bit more about that. But that is, as the title is construed, is about improving, and there's a map and some charts in your packet about where those dollars can be spent around the state. We do take most, if not all, of the governor's recommendations on the transportation side. I'm trying to think of what I'm forgetting here. And then we have a number of local options to give local units of government, counties and cities, some tools. The sales tax that we currently have, we remove the referendum requirement, and we broaden the purposes for which those sales taxes can be spent if counties so choose. The wheelage tax we raise to $10 and then allow it to be raised up to $20 in 2017 when MNLARS has functionality to be able to do that. Again, optional. And then we have the street maintenance districts. Senator Carlson's proposal is significantly modified, and he can help us describe the significant changes we've made in that. And then we have a bunch of stuff when we go through the public safety side with Mr. Turner's help, what we can discuss, what we pick up and what we do on the public safety side. But that's the overall presentation on the transportation piece. And with that, okay, great. And so we'll do a quick walkthrough with council and fiscal's help.
Ms. Boyd.
Madam Chair and members, I believe I'll walk through Article 1, and for the sake of time, maybe only point out those pieces that are different to this. amendment from the previous version we considered. So on page 3, under Greater Minnesota Transit, there is a new, well, there's an additional appropriation of $10 million in general fund each year to Greater Minnesota Transit, continuing through 16 and 17. Also, there's a rider that from the general fund, $90,000 in each year is allocated to grants for Greater Minnesota Transit providers for the cost of providing transit rides free of charge for veterans certified as disabled. At the bottom page, near the bottom of page 3 under freight, we picked up the governor's language on a $1 million appropriation only in fiscal year 14 from the general fund to pay for MnDOT's share of costs associated with cleanup of contaminated state rail bank property. Beginning of the top of page 4, there's an additional appropriation from the Trunk Highway Fund of $250,000 each year for the administrative costs of a new joint program office for economic development and alternative finance within the department, and that those costs also include costs of hiring a consultant and any reporting that needs to be done. Line 4.20, there's a governor's rec that was picked up to increase the amount available within the existing planning and delivery appropriation for regional development commissions for transportation studies outside the metro area. That used to be $600,000 each year, and now in this version is $900,000. Senator Dibble mentioned on page 5, there's an appropriation for a new program, the Corridors of Commerce program. There's an appropriation that represents roughly 85% of the new revenues picked up in later articles of the bill. And there is a rider specifying the amounts that can be used for program delivery on these projects. On page 6, starting at 625, there is an appropriation out of the existing, there's an appropriation of $10 million each year out of Trunk Highway Fund for transfer to the Transportation Economic Development account. That is an existing account that has had appropriations to it before and grants made from it. However, in this bill, there is new policy language sort of recreating the account with new language with collaboration with the Commissioner of Economic Development and Commissioner of Transportation. We have a lot the same in the rest of MnDOT. Moving to Met Council on page 11. This is this amount of appropriation represents a reduction from base of $23.4 million a year. And that base amount comes back up in 16 and 17, and the cut in 16 and 17 is $1.35 million from base each year. And I should probably mention there that later when we talk about the transit tax allocation, that amount is roughly backfilled from the transit tax allocation. Bottom of page 12, under public safety support, there is an increased appropriation for soft body armor. Actually, I believe we also had this in our language last week, but it's an increase of $92,000 each year from the general fund and $100,000 each year from the Trunk Highway Fund for soft body armor reimbursements. On page 14, under capital security, there is an additional appropriation of capital security of $1.5 million each year from the general fund, roughly to implement the recommendations of the advisory committee on capital area security and some other parameters on that. I believe, as I'm looking through, up through the bottom of page 16, that everything else was in the version we considered last week. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Turner for the rest of public safety.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Turner.
Madam Chair, members, beginning on page 17 then, I'm just going to go over the governor and Senate initiatives to the Department of Public Safety. Line 17.13, governor's initiative for a school safety center. $550,000 the first year and $505,000 the second. If you move down to page 17, line 17.33, $200,000 each year from the general fund to replace forensic lab equipment. Senate concurred with the general fund portion. It did not fund the trunk highway fund portion. Next page, 18.1, $200,000 each year from the general fund to improve forensic lab staffing. And then 18.4, $310,000 the first year and $389,000 the second to maintain live scan fingerprinting machines throughout the state. And moving down on 18.26 to 18.28, that was an amendment that was added last week regarding lawful gambling regulation. It's a transfer of $250,000 each year from the Special Revenue Fund to the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division of DPS. Line 19.4, $1.5 million each year from the General Fund for victim assistance grants, and $1.5 million each year from the General Fund for youth intervention grants. And then finally, on 19.19, there's $50,000 each year from the General Fund for a grant to the Upper Midwest Community Policing Institute for training community safety personnel about the use of de-escalation strategies. And, Madam Chair, that is the end of DPS.
Thank you, Mr. Turner.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, if I may, at the end of Article 1, there are two additional pieces, Section 7 and 8, at the bottom of page 21. And one is a new appropriation, just a one-time appropriation fiscal year 2014 of $100,000 to MnDOT from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund for phase two of the e-workplace telework program. Phase one was part of the Urban Partnership Agreement, the money that was appropriated several years ago, and this is a continuation of that component of the program. Section 8 is a reauthorization. Some bond sale expenses that were contained in Chapter 152 in 2008 are set to cancel, and so this just reauthorizes the amounts through the end of 2019, calendar year 2019.
Thank you, Ms. Boyd. Ms. Berezovsky.
Madam Chair and members, beginning with Article 2, Section 1 is the wheelage tax authorization, which this committee side broadens the authorization to apply to the entire state, not just metropolitan counties as it does now. And the rate now is $5 if it's implemented. This raises it to $10 per motor vehicle and with the option to go up to $20 beginning in 2017. Section 2 is a bill that this committee heard that increases the driver's license filing fee from $5 to $8 that a driver's license agent can charge and retain. Section 3 is the motor fuel's gross receipts tax. This section imposes the tax at the rate of 5.5% on distributors on the wholesale business of selling fuel. And it specifies credits, it specifies administrative provisions. The distributor is required to file gross receipts returns and make tax payments on a quarterly basis. So it's not paid on a per transaction basis, but on total gross receipts every quarter. And finally, that the proceeds of the gross receipts tax are dedicated by Constitution to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Then sections 4 and 5 lower the rate of the gas tax and associated gasoline fuels and special fuels effective October 1st. And the gasoline rate is 6 cents per gallon lower, with the others proportionally reduced as well. Section 7 is the change in distribution of the motor vehicle lease sales tax. And whereas now the law provides that the first $32 million collected goes to the general fund, and the remainder is split between the CASA fund for metropolitan counties, excluding Hennepin and Ramsey, and then the other half currently goes to Greater Minnesota Transit. Now, the language in the bill would give the remainder, $9 million of the remainder, to the CASA fund for the metro area, still excluding Hennepin and Ramsey. And the remainder goes to Greater Minnesota Transit. Sections 8 and 9 are the metropolitan area sales tax for transit. And it's The first section, Section 8, amends existing law, which is the CTIB quarter cent sales tax for transit that exists now. And there are some fairly significant changes to the language, but it does retain that quarter cent. So one of the changes is that the imposition section, and this is in subdivision 2A, and that the way it's structured, it was an effort to comply with the streamlined sales tax approach by imposing 0.75 cent tax on the entire seven counties, but for those counties that are already collecting the quarter cent, that is credited against the 0.75 cent. So all seven counties would be paying 0.75 cents. It requires all the counties to enter into an amended joint powers agreement, and it changes the amount of the percent. It lowers the percent of the increased revenues that the board can use, the joint powers board can use for administrative expenses. And then, as Senator Dibble mentioned, it changes the GEARS committee, which has a little bit, the CTIB as it exists now, which will now be the joint powers board, is made up of county representatives. The GEARS committee has city representatives as well, and it has the autonomy to make grants for bicycles, trails, pedestrian infrastructure, safe routes to school infrastructure, as well as land use links, streetcar development, and so on. And these grants are not subject to board approval, and they are a minimum of 3.75% of the net sales tax proceeds. Then Section 9 is the allocation of the revenues of the new metropolitan area transit sales tax. And this section specifies how the sales tax proceeds are allocated. It starts with debt service, then Met Council for Transit Operations, operating 100% of operating subsidies for transit lines, funding the GEARS grants, funding Southwest Light Rail, and the Joint Powers Board receives a quarter cent sales tax and proceeds. And then the remainder is subject to joint certification. It requires the Joint Powers and the Met Council to make a joint decision as to how that money should be allocated. And the process is detailed with each step of the way and with applicable dates. And there is a dispute resolution process if they can't agree. And if that doesn't work, then the money has to be appropriated by the legislature, the money that's remaining in this joint certification category. And it provides for a transition period of July 1, 13 through December of 13. Before the sales tax proceeds will be available for these purposes. Section 10 and Section 11 amend the current Greater Minnesota Local Option Sales Tax for transportation. It removes the voter referendum requirement and substitutes county board approval. And then it broadens the possible uses to include operating costs of transit and capital costs of safe routes to school. Then in Section 13, this exempts, it removes the exemption from MVEST for a gift transfer of a motor vehicle between individuals, but it retains the exemption for a transfer of a motor vehicle as a gift between spouses or between parent and child. Section 14 raises the rate of the motor vehicle sales tax from 6.5 to 6.875% of the purchase price of a motor vehicle. And Section 15 increases the in-lieu tax that's imposed instead of MVEST on a collector vehicle. Section 16 also changes the distribution of the motor vehicle sales tax proceeds. 60-40 is retained, and that is 60% for highways and 40% for transit. But within the 40%, there's a shift that 35 instead of 36 is for Metro Transit, and 5 instead of the current 4 is for Greater Minnesota Transit.
And just mention all this struck language is just obsolete language because it had to do with the ramp up of the phasing in of the motor vehicle sales tax under the constitutional dedication.
Section 17 reduces the maximum that of the capital costs of a rail transit project that the counties through their regional railroad authorities may contribute, and it's reduced from 10% to 5%. Section 18 is a modified version of the bill that the committee heard. It was called Street Improvement Districts. It's now been narrowed to include only street maintenance. And street maintenance is defined in that in subdivision 1. The other major change, I think, besides changing everything to street maintenance, is that a parcel of real estate that's owned by an institution of public charity is not subject to the street maintenance fee. Section 19 is the regional bonding authority for the Metropolitan Council. Section 20 is new authority to the Met Council to issue revenue bonds, and this goes along with the sales tax proceeds that they will be receiving on the new sales tax. Section 21 is a governor's initiative, and it extends a sunset that will occur in June of 2013 out to 2016, and that is for the statutory appropriation of the federal economic recovery funds. Article 3, Section 1 is a lot of new language, and it creates the Corridors of Commerce program, which is a program that is intended to improve trunk highways that will help to improve commerce in the state. And there's a lot of new language that describes eligibility and criteria for evaluation and selection and reporting. Section 2 was a governor's initiative, and that removes the prohibition on paying tort claims with trunk highway funds from statute. And it does add an unauthorized use of payments to the minute services that are in excess of costs that can be tied to trunk highway purposes. Section 3 is the section. This section increases from $1.2 million to $2 million the maximum that the Commissioner of Transportation can spend for research that's performed by the Center for Transportation Studies. And it prescribes certain studies that the center is required to perform. Section 4 adjusts the excess sum of the CASA fund because one component of it is the amount of CASA that's attributable to the gas tax that exceeds 20 cents per gallon. So under this bill, the gas tax will only be 19 cents per gallon. So there was an adjustment made to those numbers, and it also includes half of the CASA share of the proceeds of the gross receipts tax in the excess sum. So the other half would be in the apportionment sum.
The other expression we use, of course, is the old formula and the new formula, old money and new money in CASA. And we're trying to allow everyone, we're trying to hold kind of existing dollars harmless and allow folks to enjoy the benefit of new proceeds in equal measure. I'm not quite sure if we totally get there with this, but that's our goal.
Sections 5 through 9 are all bills that the committee heard. The high-value vehicles for salvage title purposes is Section 5. Section 6 is the change in title fees that begins in 2017. Section 7 is the annual permits for overweight vehicles. Sections 8 and 9, well, Section 8 is the concurrent classroom training, classroom and behind-the-wheel training for driver ed. Section 9 is the Novice Driver Education Improvement Task Force. Then Section 10 is new language that creates the Transportation Economic Development Program. And it's created in the MnDOT chapter of law, of statutes. And it requires the Commissioners of Transportation and DEED to work together to implement this program and to solicit grant applications. And it gives, again, a lot of criteria and so on for awarding grants. And the financial assistance under this program is limited to 70% of project costs. There must be geographic balance in the state and a report to the legislature. Section 11 is an amendment to the Safe Routes to School language and statute, and this identifies various activities that aren't related to infrastructure that can be accomplished by the commissioner as long as the commissioner doesn't use bond proceeds for these purposes. Section 12 is a governor's initiative that allows MnDOT to cancel any remaining money in the grade crossing safety account back to the trunk highway fund on a biennial basis. Section 13 has to do with the Minnesota Youth Intervention Programs Association, and it increases the share of appropriations for youth intervention that may be used by the association, and it specifies additional purposes. Section 14 has to do with capital security, and it establishes the position of emergency manager and specifies duties and personnel. Section 15 is also part of the capital security bill that the committee heard, and it clarifies that the Commissioner of Public Safety has final authority over public safety and security in the Capitol complex, whereas admin is responsible for general management of the Capitol complex. Section 16 allows all of the metropolitan area county regional rail authorities to develop bus rapid transit systems. Section 17 is the underlying bill, and it defines project in the statute that has to do with regional rail authorities' contributions to the capital cost of a rail project. Sections 18 and 19 have to do with Section 18 is Met Council when it is the lead transportation authority in a transitway project to contract with community-based organizations to provide engagement activities. And Section 19 encourages any lead transportation authority to make efforts to employ women, minorities, and contract with specific types of businesses. And it also encourages the commissioner to increase participation in highway projects for small businesses in economically disadvantaged areas of the state. Section 20 provides that the Greater Minnesota Transit component of the cost of North Star Commuter Rail is exempt from a statute that limits financial assistance recipients. And Section 21 has two repealers. One repeals the Trunk Highway Economic Development Account because it's superseded by the new economic development program that's created in this bill. And it also repeals the expiration date of the Minnesota Council on Transportation Access. And then Article 4 just has one section, and it provides that if the gross receipts tax on fuel distributors is ever found to be invalid, that the sections that reduce the gasoline and related taxes, and also the section that adjusts the county state aid highway fund formula, would be of no force and effect.
Thank you, Ms. Berezovsky. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm available to respond to questions or entertain amendments.
Senator Osmek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was the start of my question, are we going to hear from testifiers first before we do amendments and questions, or were we going to hear from them? So it sounds like you want to start with questions and amendments first prior to the testifiers?
Senator Correct, Dibble? Although, Madam Chair, I suspect there will be amendments which folks in the audience will want to weigh in on, and so we should do that.
Madam Chair, that's a good assumption.
Right. And then I think folks want to give kind of overall reactions to the proposal in front of us, and so those folks I think will take then towards the end. And I know what Senator Rest is going to say. If folks can please keep their comments brief, and if we've heard it before, even briefer.
Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment.
Okay.
A20 amendment.
Senator Rest has the A20 amendment.
Madam Senator Chair, Mr. Gordon, I wonder if you would give a copy of the amendment to the Commissioner of Public Safety, please. Madam Chair, this amendment comes as from discussion with the Lieutenant Governor and as a recommendation that came from the report on the Capital Security Task Force with regard to interagency agreements for the provision of security measures within each of the agencies. I don't believe that it is controversial. It is a recommendation of the chair of the Capital Security Task Force, the Lieutenant Governor Ivan Putner-Solon.
Are there any questions or comments regarding the A20 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Yes, I'll just mention that the Lieutenant Governor, she served on the task force, correct?
She's the chair of it.
She chaired it. Felt very strongly that we needed to adopt this provision. As I understand it, it allows for, and maybe we can, looks like the commissioner is conferring, maybe we can have the agency, once they can give us their reaction. But I think it's a recommendation of the task force report. I think it's just right. Tightening up how public safety maintains responsibility for
in each of the buildings,
in each
that
of the buildings
is
in the entire
around
Capitol
here, that so that
campus.
there's a central kind of certainly a central authority in the commissioner of public safety, but then also that there is the fees that are charged back through the agencies for the particular needs that they have in the buildings, because the need for security is greater in some buildings than others, and they get to deal with that on an individual basis with the agencies. I don't know if the commissioner would like to comment, but
welcome, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Mona Doman, Commissioner of Public Safety. Senator Rest, the way we understand this amendment is the way it currently exists in law.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
It's a clarification of the authority, yes, at the request of the Lieutenant Governor.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner.
Senator Rest and members. This exists already. It does clarify a little bit.
That's all she wants,
maybe.
Okay, very good. We're good. We're good with it.
So the agency is okay with this language, both agencies?
Madam Chair.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, under this scenario, is there other recommendations or other appropriations that that you should be including in this then, or is it just a specific recommendation?
Madam Chair, there's already language in the bill with regard to
all the other ones?
The Capital Security Task Force recommendations. That's correct, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Senator Dibble, did you have a comment?
No, if folks are needing further clarification, I know Mr. Turner helped draft the amendment, but it sounds like we are in agreement. This is a good thing.
Any other questions or comments or discussion? Seeing none then, all in favor of the A20 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Senator Rest?
Madam Chair, I have the A25 amendment.
Senator Rest has the A25 amendment.
And I would direct members' attention to page 32 of the A15. It's a very simple amendment that just calls attention to when planning is being done, et cetera, that the Botineau Boulevard Transit Way is just included in the discussions and the considerations, does nothing more than that. So I would move the amendment. I don't think it's controversial at all, and just hope for support for just that reason, just to make sure that the Botineau Transit Way, which runs through Senator Champion's district and almost totally through my district on Robbinsdale and Crystal, just be on the radar. That's all it's asking.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Any comments or questions regarding the A25 amendment? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this amendment is acceptable. I just wanted to mention, though, that the reason that Southwest shows up in the bill in the way it does is because Southwest Corridor, as we know, has entered into its official federal process and is in preliminary engineering, and we need to show tangible progress to the feds and make sure that we're putting those matching dollars on the table. So if folks see that and get anxious why their line isn't appearing, doesn't mean that all those other eligible lines that are part of the transportation policy plan as adopted by the Metropolitan Council aren't going to be funded. They absolutely are. And it's totally fine. We can name them all if we want, and I'm very comfortable with that. But name them or not, everything that's kind of queued up, are going to receive those planning and those capital grants from the sales tax, and of course, have operating dollars for them too, which is a great idea as well. Build them and run them. And so that's why Southwest shows up, because it's the next thing in the queue and it's in its federal process. Naming, making sure that we're, naming other lines, that's perfectly acceptable too.
Right. Any other questions or comments on the 25 amendment? Seeing none then, all in favor of the A25, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, I offer the A27 amendment.
Senator Carlson offers the A27 amendment. While that's being distributed, would you like to start describing it? Or?
Sure. Madam Chair and members of the committee, A27 modifies the A15 amendment, delete all amendment, to add some language on page 35 and 36, just to clarify that the opt-out providers are included in the ability to fund operations. Opt-out providers are under sections 473.388, and what this amendment does is it adds that language in two places, and it says the words added are operations of providers under section 473.388. And, Madam Chair, it's more or less comfort language and just clarifies words that are in the bill before it.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, yes, this is an acceptable amendment. Opt-out providers would be receiving money. But I'm very comfortable with comfort language. So.
It's all important we be comfortable, especially on a long evening. Any additional questions or comments? It's suddenly lonely over here.
There's a case on your side of the table. You're always holding it up over there.
They're here. They're just lurking. any additional questions or comments on the A27 amendment?
Chair.
Senator Pratt.
I would like to offer my support for Senator Carlson's amendment. Sorry, I stepped away for a moment, but I think it's a good amendment, and I certainly, as we've talked, was the original intent, and we just wanted to clarify it.
Thank you. All right. Seeing no further questions or comments, all in favor of the A27 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Senator Osmer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question to Senator Dibble in Section 18. You're changing this now down to maintenance districts, and you're being very specific now as to what's considered maintenance. In my history, we many times would start a project that had the nicest of intent. Perhaps Senator Carlson wants to respond to this either way. That we would start down a project that's a simple mill and overlay, which would be covered under this project or under this language, that suddenly you would hit a pocket which has deteriorated to the point where you're going to have to do a reconstruction. And from what I could see here, if that did proceed into a reconstruction phase, that would not be subject to the provisions of this law. Same goes for if a city decided they wanted to put in an entire new project, that they would not be able to use that. Meanwhile, right next door could have just a mill and overlay, which would be subject to it. So I'm questioning if something did happen where a city was under the intent of a simple mill and overlay, does a change in the project mean that they are no longer subject to this provision, which means their entire project funding collapses?
Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, I will indeed toss this one to Senator Carlson.
Senator Carlson.
I wonder if you could maybe clarify that example a little bit more.
Okay.
You're saying whether the which funding collapses, because Senator Osmick and Madam Chair, the rebuild would still be an example of an assessment to the property owners. A repair, which that's why we cut this back to be primarily maintenance of minor type, that would be something that would be covered by the instigation of these fees. So in your case, where if you're talking about a major change in the status of a street or a status of a project, I think there may be maybe other funds that a city would have to come up with, because I think you're talking about something that might be a collapse of perhaps a sewer pipe or something else like that, which may have to come right out of a city's other funds.
Madam Chair, I'll give a better scenario for Senator Carlson, because this has happened. We have many times started out on a simple mill and overlay, which under this definition would be considered a repair, that you find out that the underlying bed has deteriorated in some portions, which you did not know at the time you were doing the appraisal of what the project was going to be. During that time, you found multiple streets, perhaps, where the underlying gravel bed has deteriorated to the point where you have to dig it up and replace it. That is not a simple mill and overlay. That turns into a reconstruction project. So if a city went down using this mechanism by which to fund a mill and overlay, suddenly found themselves, oops, we've already done the project. We thought we were going to do a mill and overlay. Now we have a complete reconstruction situation. My reading is that the fees that were generated are going in for a mill and overlay, but now it is a reconstruction, which is not subject to subdivision one of your of this law, and would not be then therefore eligible for payment out of the fund that was developed. So the people would have been paying into a fund for a mill and overlay that they thought was going to happen. Now they're going to be assessed a separate street. So you would have to go through the regular street reconstruction fees, and you'd have to go through a regular assessment hearing. Is that, am I interpreting this correct?
Senator Carlson?
Madam Chair and Senator Osmick, yes, I believe you are, because again, when the street maintenance district is adopted, adopted by ordinance, there is a street maintenance program that has to be approved as part of that ordinance, and it would not allow a going beyond what you would use these funds for. So, yes, it would.
Okay, so, Madam Chair, so then when the street district, when the district was created with the intent of the mill and overlay, let's say that they had been collecting fees for 2 or 3 years. Now they realize, oop, now we have a reconstruction, so we cannot use those funds. But those funds were originally dedicated for a mill and overlay. What happens to the funds in the fund that they've been collecting for 3 years?
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair and Senator Osmick, those would remain in that fund for that particular maintenance district, according to the wording we have in the bill. They would not be able to be used for anything else other than maintenance per the language in the bill for that particular dedicated district.
Okay, Madam Chair, Senator Carlson. So then, when you create this district, you have to, my understanding is you have to create, you also have to say what the project is, right? You have to say this is a mill and overlay, and that's what we're creating this district for, correct? That's my interpretation, correct?
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair and Senator Osmick, no. What you would do is you would put together a maintenance schedule for that particular district. And it might be the entire city, and it might be a lifetime that you're wishing to get out of all of the streets, out of some of the streets. And it would be, my theory is that it would be a limited amount of maintenance that would be prescribed by the program that the engineers have for that particular municipality.
Madam Chair.
Senator Osmond.
Okay, I think I'm getting this clear. I still don't like it. But so what you're saying is if you started down the path of mill and overlay, you wound up going into a reconstruction, you would have to leave all the money in the fund and wait for another eligible service to come up on the list where you may be able to expend those funds based on the statutory language in Subdivision 1.
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair and Senator Osmick, I don't know if that we could look at it in such a micro scale because, again, we're looking at establishing a maintenance district. So there may be annual, semiannual projects that would be over that whole district, perhaps over the whole city. So, yes, the funds would remain in that district or in that account but applied to the district in whatever means they have already specified would be in their plan.
Madam Chair.
Again, just to finish up, it would not be dedicated to a replacement of a street, and hopefully the city is going to be able to project replacements. Additions, anything that's major like that we did remove from this bill. We specifically wanted to remove things that are generally large property assessments or something that could be an increase in the street, buying the right-of-way, things like that. We wanted to specifically take that out.
Senator Osmond?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. It does help me understand it. When I'm going down to this level of granularity, it's only because I have the history, and this is actually what's going to happen when you implement the law. That's why I'm not trying to micromanage, but I'm trying to throw cases at you that are really going to happen in the real world. So the other question I had actually will probably go to Senator Dibble. In Article 2, Section 3, the motor fuels gross receipts tax. I'll try to explain it, and I just want to make sure I understand what's going on here. In another section of the bill, we are reducing the gas tax by 6 cents. We are at this particular position. We are creating a new tax of 5.5% on gross receipts by a distributor. So, again, I'm a fan of real world examples. So, distributor goes out with his tanker truck, goes out to a farmer's house. He wants 100 gallons for his gasoline for his tractors or diesel or whatever the case might be. So when that distributor sells that product to the farmer, there's going to be a 5.5% tax someplace in this equation. Whether it's, and I think your contention was you don't know where the tax is going to go, whether the distributor is going to pay the tax himself or he's going to pass it on to the actual consumer. But there is a 5.5 tax that's going to happen at that point of transaction.
The tax, so that doesn't have to be.
So,
Senator Dibble?
Thank you. So Senator Osmick, Ms. Berezovsky will help me as well, but I'll just point out, 25.21 does exempt gasoline sold for farm use in those amounts. I'm not sure exactly what the mechanism is by which we exempt those sales, but Ms. Berezovsky can help us.
I'll withdraw that question, because if it is in there that it's excluded, then it's a poor example. I'll create a better example. Tanker truck from refinery goes to Joe's gas place, unloads 1,000 gallons worth of gasoline into their tanks for sale to the general public. I assume at that point in time, when that 1,000 gallons is moved from the distributor off of his tanker trucks into the storage tanks, that there's a 5.5% tax that's going to be engaged at that point in time. Correct?
Yeah. Senator Osmick, no. The tax is paid quarterly by the distributor on their gross receipts for those fuels that they've sold for highway purposes. It's not paid on a per transaction basis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So,
Senator Osmick.
So this is, they're going to get a bill based on, they're going to have to say how much the distributor produced in a certain quarterly period, and then that distributor is going to see a bill come from us at the state for 5.5% that they're going to send us a check. Is that the better way of describing it?
Well, yeah, Senator they'll file a return. I don't know that we'll send them a bill, but,
they're going to find out. They're going to have to owe us 5.5, and they're going to have to figure it out.
They're going to tell us in all likelihood.
Granted.
We're going to trust them.
Okay, so, Madam Chair, and one last question that's sent, and it's not me. I've got my phone on. So then your contention is that 5.5% tax at the distributor level that they're going to be paying on a quarterly basis, you're not sure if that will be paid, will be passed on to the consumer, or that the distributor is going to eat the 5.5%.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, Senator Osmond, correct.
Okay. With that, and I know we've been doing some amendments, I'd like to present the A23 amendment.
Senator Osmek offers the A23 amendment.
While it's being passed out, Madam Chair?
Senator Osmek.
In the sake of time, so we can move things along.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
This is a reset, best term to reset. This amendment does the deletes to leave the gas tax as is right now. Removes the motor fuels gross receipts provision in the bill, and that's all it does.
Any questions or comments on the A23 amendment? Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, I'm sure you'll be shocked, Senator Osmick. I oppose the amendment. Kind of takes out the guts of the bill. I would encourage members to vote no. Mm-hmm. It doesn't allow us to get any really new dollars to roads and bridge purposes.
Madam Chair.
Senator Osmak.
And I'm sure Senator Dibble knew this one was coming, or at least you had a good idea. I just philosophically don't want to start down this path. We're creating a brand new tax here that goes into distributors, and I believe that I have no doubt in my mind, based on the margins that gasoline distributors and the people who run the plants, that they are going to pass on the 5.5% tax. On your current gas prices, that means an 18.6% fuel tax on a $3 and $3. If it's three, gas is $3.39 right now, you'd see an 18.6% tax show up for the cost of your gasoline. I know that lowering the gas tax, as far as I'm concerned, is a good thing, but lowering it by 6 and 8, raising it by 18.6 is not something I really want to be a party to. I do request a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested, and a roll call will be granted. Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just reiterate what I've said earlier. We don't know if it will be passed along, and we know what we have to do. We know what the need is. We've heard from a number of folks. We also know that we get a return on this investment in transportation, manyfold, more efficient economy, more competitive economy, fuel savings, jobs that are created from the construction of roads and bridges. I think this is a good proposal that also contains some reform.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Pratt.
Thank
you,
ma'am.
And then Senator Westrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share Senator Osmak's concern with creating a new tax. My question is for Ms. Berezovsky. Does this new tax still qualify under Article 14, Section 10 of the Constitution and constitutionally dedicated to highway user tax distribution fund?
Senator, I'm sorry, Ms. Berezovsky.
Madam Chair and Senator Pratt, it's drafted to try to pick up that constitutional language on 25.7 imposed on the business of selling the means or substance used for propelling vehicles on the highways of the state. It is authorized under Section 10, and therefore, it would be dedicated to highway user under the constitutional language.
Senator Pratt.
Just one other comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. I do know that I oppose the tax, the new tax, and would prefer to keep it the way it is. The margins on retail gas sales are so slim. There's no other expectation that these would be passed on to consumers. And so I speak in favor of Senator Osmak's amendment.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Senator Westrom.
Madam Chair, I guess to Senator Dibble, maybe I didn't catch the response to Senator Osmak, or maybe it wasn't in there, but do I understand the 5.5% replacement tax would be on all fuel, or would agriculture and off-road use vehicles be exempt from it like they are the gas tax now?
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, Senator Westrom, that is correct. So agriculture and off-road are exempt. Of course, we know that what happens with the off-road is some money is taken directly out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and given to the off-road highway vehicle accounts, and then the grant and aid program is funded through that.
Okay.
And what program are you referring to? The last one. I didn't hear you. Trailed off with the microphone.
The grant and aid account program for the purposes of developing off-highway vehicle trails and recreational facilities, repairing damage, that sort of thing that the off-highway vehicle account is used for.
Mr. Chair, I,
Senator Westrom,
maybe that's news to me. I wasn't aware that there was money collected from the fuel sold to agriculture that was used for an off-road vehicle account. Did I hear that right?
No,
Senator.
No, the agricultural fuel sales are simply exempt. I'm not sure the mechanism by which they're exempted. Maybe council can help. But the way we handle off-highway vehicle exemption, because you know a lot of folks just pull up to the gas station and fill up their ATVs and snowmobiles and the like.
Right.
A certain amount of money is taken out.
Oh, right.
It's kind of skimmed off the top.
A small percentage,
right.
Based on studies that they say snowmobiles that use it pay a gas tax but really aren't using the roads for
correct.
The snowmobile, et cetera.
Okay. Correct.
That's what you're referring
yeah.
to. So the 5.5 would clearly be exempt from distributors charging before they deliver it to an ag customer or a construction site customer or those types of people. Would only be on vehicle use gas that's being driven on the roads, basically.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Senator Westrom, that's correct.
Okay.
Senator Miller and then Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe Senator Dibble can answer this. To Senator Westrom's question, though, agriculture, if this is charged to the distributor, the 5.5%, and if the 18 cents per gallon under the current scenario is passed on to the consumer, then nobody would be exempt because that would just be an extra 18 cents per gallon at the pump. Is that correct?
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, it would be handled in the same way that fuel is sold today, if that's the case. Of course, we don't know if it's going to be passed on or not. So, by whatever mechanism that those current entities are exempted, that would hold true today, because the gas tax, the per gallon tax, is also paid at this point in the process as well.
Senator Miller,
Madam Chair, I mean, there's no question in my mind that the distributor is going to pass on this to the consumer. So whether it's 10 cents or 15 cents or 20 cents per gallon, that the consumer is going to pay that much more at the pump. So that's not a tax. That's just the gasoline is going to go up by that much. So they might be exempt from the tax, but this won't be a tax. This is just be the cost of fuel. Is that correct?
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, the gas tax is a consumer tax that is passed through. We know that. This is a 5.5% gross receipts tax on the distributor. It is entirely their choice to pass it on or not. It's their choice. So the market, competition, other forces, or they can choose to absorb some of it as a cost of doing business. It's entirely up to them. We don't know that.
Senator Peterson, did you have a question?
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know, Madam Chair, if there is members of the audience that would want to testify on this issue. I don't know. Is it appropriate to have them come up now, or we may be coming back to revisit this later through testimony, or is it appropriate to take testimony now if folks are interested or not?
No. Senator Dibble, do you have a preference?
It's perfectly acceptable to me. I don't know if Senator Osmick wants testimony before we vote on his amendments.
Senator
or not.
Osmick?
So it's perfectly fine to take testimony now from whomever would like to speak on this subject.
Senator Osmick, do you have a preference?
I think I would. I mean, I happen to notice on the list that we have Kevin Thoma from the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. I don't know if we want to open the whole floodgates up, but the real question I think that Senator Peterson and Pratt and Westrom and myself and the Republicans have is the effect on gas prices and what are the distributors going to do? Because I've taken an economics course enough to know what's probably going to happen, but I'd like to hear it from the horse's mouth.
So Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, in my own mind, too, I'm thinking it does cost more to transport fuel as we all know, and if the refineries are located to the metro area and that fuel is transported to greater Minnesota, northern Minnesota, from a refinery, you know, that drives up the costs. And so through this tax, I'm in your mind, is it going to raise the price of fuel exorbitantly higher in greater Minnesota than it would in the metro because of the transport costs?
Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Peters, I'm not quite following your logic. Again, you know, this is a gross receipts tax paid quarterly by the distributor, you know, on their reported sales of fuel for highway purposes, you know, or for, you know, vehicles that use our roads and streets. So, you know, I don't think it necessarily creates more costs in terms of transporting fuel around the state. It's paid on a quarterly basis, you know, at the wholesale level by the distributors based on their gross sales. So,
thank you.
And again, you know, I'll go back to my original point. We don't know. We have no way of knowing whether or not folks are. I'm sure they're going to say they are going to pass it on. That is entirely their choice, whether or not they do that.
Senator Osmey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Senator Dibble, just maybe to more hone in on what Senator Peterson is talking about is, let's say in the metropolitan area, the average gas price is $3 a gallon. And let's say that the average gas price in, let's say Ely, is $3.50 a gallon. The gross receipts from Ely are going to be $3.50 per gallon higher than they are going to be in the metropolitan area. So therefore, if I'm understanding how this is written, the gross receipts that the distributor is going to receive are going to be taxed, or there's going to be a higher tax because they would be higher. Maybe I'm over-analyzing and micro-analyzing this a little bit too much, but or is it maybe I'm thinking more it's going to be one big pool of money and that's what we're going to be hitting it against. Is that a better definition?
Senator Dibble.
Well, you know, first of all, this is on the wholesale price.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, it's not construed on the retail price. So, you know, and like I said, it's I don't know how many refineries and distributors are around the state, but it's paid on a quarterly basis on grocery receipts at the wholesale level for the specific purpose for fuel that's used for these specific purposes.
But Madam Chair, is that if there is someone who is in that industry, I'd love to hear what they have to say about this. So the answer is yes.
If there are any testifiers who would like to comment at this point on the A23 amendment, please step forward. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kevin Toma, and I work for the members of the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. And we are the licensed wholesale businesses in Minnesota that would be responsible for collecting and paying the 5.5% tax. And I guess I'd like to share a story with you of the way we see this happening. And I'll go back to the big shiny tanker that's been mentioned previously here tonight. That tanker holds 8,500 gallons of liquid product. At current prices, that would be $3.25. When you multiply 8,500 gallons times the $3.25, you get $27,701. Then you would include the markup of the 5.5% for the gross receipts. That comes out to be $1,523.58. When you divide that by the number of gallons that's held by that tanker, the 8,500 gallons, you come out to 17 cents. It's actually 17.9, which we'd round up to probably 18 cents. So by voting for this evening, we will indeed put that into the price of gasoline. This Senate file 1173 as amended would cause the price of gasoline to go up 17 cents.
Senator Dibble.
I'm not surprised by the testimony, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay.
And if you want to put it on a quarterly basis, Madam Chair?
Yes.
If you'd like to put it on the quarterly basis, I'll give you a real-life experience. I also own and operate retail locations, and we average about 270 loads in a quarter. That would be $411,366.60. Last year, I made $40,000 in my convenience stores. There's no way I can pass them on. I can eat $411,000 per quarter. Stand for any questions.
Senator Dibble.
So, Madam Chair, I'll just remind folks, we are lowering the gas tax, the per gallon tax, by 6 cents. The numbers that we were aiming for would have been somewhere, north of about an additional 7 cents if we were just to simply do the gas tax on, not do this tax reform piece, be, a little north of 7 cents per gallon. That's how the numbers added up. So I'm not sure where this math is coming from, but that was our target and how we figured this out.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Toma.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, when I used that narrative, I subtracted the 6 cents.
Senator Osme.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's throw in a new scenario. What happens if your gas in your tanker is $4 a gallon? Does that, correct me if I'm wrong, it's no longer going to be almost 18 cents. It's going to be probably closer to 22 cents if my math in my head probably goes the right way.
Mr. Toma?
Madam Chair, Senator, that's correct. And the reverse of that would also be in effect. If it went down 10 cents, it would go down a penny.
And Madam Chair, one Senator final Osborne. Question. On a per gallon basis, what's the margin that the distributors actually make money off of on a gallon of gas when you put it into a car? We know we get a gallon of gas. What's the actual, can you give me a general idea of what's the average margin that the distributors make when they actually produce a gallon of gas?
Mr. Toma?
Madam Chair, Senator, I can speak to my margin, and my margin is 12 cents a gallon.
Thank you.
Senator Westrum.
So, Mr. Chair, to the witness, Mr. Toma, and that's kind of consistent with what I've heard. I've talked to some of my retailers. Some might say up around 15 cents a gallon, but it strikes me that 12 cents a gallon under the scenario of 325 in today's market, if you were going to eat this as a business, which you have the option to do, you would have zero markup in your gas. And I'm not sure how many years you could be in business at a zero markup in gas, and it would put you out of business. But, the reality is it's going to pass on to the customer, consumer. If I heard you right, is that correct?
Mr. Toma?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, that's correct. We would have to pass it along. On a 12-cent margin, and using my narrative, the additional tax would be 17 cents. We would be losing 5 cents.
So, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members, I guess I just raise this question.
Thought.
Going to a 5.5% tax, if you're looking to raise revenue, it works better when we're at $3 and $4 gas. It's almost an incent for the fund to.
The higher gas prices go, the more money is.
Think about the scenario 4 years ago when gas was at about $1.79 a gallon. And I'll have to do the math in my head, but it almost strikes me that maybe would be about an even swap, but we actually might even have less money in the fund. If gas gets down to $1.79, $1.50, back where it used to be a normal price. guess maybe Senator Dibble, do we have a reverse incentive to not have our prices go down?
Senator.
Because we all of a sudden are relying on a non-steady source of gas tax revenues by removing the 6 cents and adding this 5.5%.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, Senator Westrom, well, as the Transportation Finance Advisory Committee identified as, no big secrets in our state or in our country, the gas tax itself is less than ideal. It's proven to be volatile, and has been proven, especially on a, on a per-gallon basis, to be a diminishing source of revenue. We know that the Federal Highway Trust Fund is programmed to go into a negative balance very soon. We know that the dollars we're collecting presently for gas tax in Minnesota become a diminishing source under our present scenario. We have a huge funding cliff that we're facing in a couple of years. We're not even keeping up with maintaining what we've got. So we're already in this situation where, construing a tax, whether it's this gross receipts tax at the wholesale level or the gas tax at the consumer retail level, is less than optimal and less than ideal. That being said, it's the best we've got now, because some of the other ideas that are out there, are a little too far in the future or have logistical problems or political problems or the like. So, we're not going to be able to solve that problem here today. We need to keep studying it, working on it, thinking of, building political consensus perhaps around other ways to pay for transportation in our state and in our country. Mileage base, is the one that's talked about the most. I suspect that'll have a fairly long duration before it's before all the kinks are ironed out or it's taken up or it's politically palatable. Using general fund sources of taxes. Some states do it, but very few do. And, there you are right in the middle of the fight over education, health care, public safety, et cetera, et cetera. Don't know if that's the ideal way to pay for transportation either.
Thank you. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a lot of numbers flying. I'm trying to get my head around. We're reducing 6 cents. I understand your scenario and what it's costing. You think it would be 17 cents if we stay at the 5.5% increase per gallon. Does that include the minus 6? Can we subtract the 6 from that?
Mr. Toma?
Madam Chair, Senator, in the narrative that I gave, I removed the 6 cents. I did it based on what we would end up with for fees and taxes if this bill were to pass today.
Madam Chair? Okay,
Senator
so
Jensen?
How much do we pay for gas tax now? Minus?
Right.
You know what I mean? Current law, how much do we pay for gas tax?
Senator Dibble?
Right. I believe the federal tax is 18.4 and the state gas tax per gallon. And state gas tax is 28.5. That includes the additional that we have for debt service that at some point will go away under Chapter 152. How much is that? 3.5 cents will diminish as we pay off that debt service that was authorized by Chapter 152. So it'll go down to 25 cents. And I don't know if Mr. Thoma removed all of those from his calculation of the per gallon or not, because this is again is back at the wholesale level.
Mr. Toma?
Madam Chair, I removed the 6 cents and did it for what the price of the fuel would be as if it were happening today. I did not include a removal or reduction of any fees that may be reduced in the future. I did it on a today's base scenario.
Senator Dibble, what's the timing on the 152 on when that 3.5 cents would phase out? Do you know?
That is, Madam Chair, maybe Ms. Boyd can help me. That's as the debt service that's authorized, trunk highway bonding that's authorized by Chapter 152 amortizes over the coming years. Do we know, Ms. Boyd?
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, I don't have an estimate on that in front of me, no.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it floats out till the... I'd have to get back to you. I don't want to give you an off-the-cuff answer. I'd have to get back to the committee.
Thank you. Senator Osmek and then Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm also trying to get my hands or head around the 5.5 and how you're going to assess, try and predict that within your model, because gas prices, as we all know, go like this all over the place. And hopefully they're down over here. I like that better than up here. But is that going to create any level of bookkeeping or any more grander level of detail that you're going to have to track internally in order to figure out where? Because I think it's still going to be, as the way that Senator Dibble is doing this, is it's a pool of money, and we're going to assess 5.5 against it. But is there going to be any markup you're going to have to do on your pricing in order to accommodate, to make sure you've got enough money to pay the taxes that you expect to go, depending on the volatility of the costs?
Mr. Thoma.
Madam Chair, Senator, when doing the accounting for it, we will have to have different, for lack of a better word, buckets to put. We charge the 5.5% on this fuel because it went into it wasn't exempt, for example, like the farm fuel is exempt. So we didn't charge the 5.5%, and we won't owe that to revenue on this pile of gallons. But on this pile, we did charge the 5.5%, so we will owe revenue on these gallons. So it will create extra bookkeeping and ultimately, I would imagine, extra enforcement from revenue.
One final comment, Madam
Senator
Chair.
Osmek.
By doing this and by creating this level of an increase, we're also blowing holes in every local jurisdiction's budget, every county budget, because when they've already put in they've already done their budgeting, they're trying to predict a retail cost. When you're putting in another 18 to 20 cents on a police department or a street crew, that's an incredibly large tax increase to the locals also. Just want to make that point. Thank you.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to be clear, the number that the testifier gave, if I heard him correctly, is a 17 or rounded up to 18 cent increase on top of what we're already paying. So it's the 28.5 cents. We'd take off 6 cents from that, but you'd add on the 17 cents. So it's not the 17 cents. There's no doubt in my mind that's going to be passed on to the consumer. That's what you do. I mean, you can't, obviously, our testifier, if you have a 12-cent margin and there's a 17-cent addition to cost of doing business, you're not going to eat 17 cents. You'd be losing 5 cents a gallon. You can't do that. So the 17 cents is on top of what we're already paying. And as the testifier mentioned, he already took out the 6 cents from that calculation. So regardless of whether or not the 3.5 cent comes off or not, it doesn't affect the 17 cents.
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. I think we have a unique opportunity here, having a person who actually writes these checks and bills. You said you had an 8,500-gallon load. Now, when you sell a load of gasoline, you record that, and then you multiply it by the 18.4, I'm assuming, for the federal tax, and you send that, you declare that, and then send that in. Then you also declare the 28.5-cent tax, which is $2,422, and you send that to the state of Minnesota. And then, of course, during the wintertime, I think you have another 2-cent tax that you send into the state of Minnesota, which is another $170 because of this. It's the click-on, click-off that happens, I believe, with daylight savings time or something. Now, when you use the $3.25 number, were you using, were you adding in the federal tax and the state tax onto the price of the wholesale gasoline? Because, and I guess I'd like council to answer this, whether we're actually charging tax on the tax.
Mr. Toma.
Madam Chair, Senator, what I used to figure that price was rack, freight, state tax, federal tax. I didn't include a markup in that. I did not include the 12 cents for myself in that. So it was rack, freight, state, and federal tax. That amounted to the $3.25.
So,
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, we don't tax on the tax. So, I mean, right there we have a flaw in the calculation.
Thank you. Additional questions or comments from members? Is there additional testimony at this time? Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Kate Johansson. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and its 2,400 employers, 80% of which are small businesses. I'll keep my comments brief. I just wanted to draw your attention to the fact that accepting the calculation that the previous testifier has put forth, if this were to go through and a 17-cent per gallon gas tax were to be passed through to consumers, it would put Minnesota at the third highest gas tax in the country. This is according to a House research document that is available online, which is why I have my computer in front of me. My apologies for that. And certainly I think that impacts the legislature's overall focus on jobs and economic competitiveness. So certainly just wanted to raise that as a concern as this conversation moves forward, and would be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Johansson. Senator Dibble.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I would caution before folks start throwing around figures like third highest gas tax in the country, they have their numbers right. I think there's some serious methodology problems here.
Senator Carlson.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Johansson. What is the wholesale price that was used for that calculation?
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson.
Ms. Johansson.
I'm simply drawing attention to the fact that if we're accepting the previous testifier's calculation, which, as Senator Dibble rightly pointed out, is certainly subject to scrutiny and mathematical critique, that it would raise Minnesota from the number that Senator Dibble mentioned earlier, which is 28.5 cents per gallon, to 45.5 cents per gallon. And the House research document shows that with that current level of funding, that would put us just behind California and Connecticut, which come in around 53 cents and 45 cents, respectively.
Well, Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Johansson, you cannot make that statement unless you can answer what wholesale price did you multiply times 5.5%.
Ms. Johansson.
Madam Chair and Senator Carlson, I'm sorry, I don't have that information in front of me. The reason I'm raising the point is just to cast the context of the larger discussion as being something that could potentially impact economic competitiveness. And speaking on behalf of an organization that has nearly 2,000 small businesses for whom this might be kind of a bottom line issue when they're looking at transportation costs in their business, I just wanted to help members kind of put that in the back of their mind. Certainly without getting into mathematical analysis.
Senator Carlson, follow-up?
Yes, Madam Chair and Mr. Hans, you have to get into the mathematics if you're going to make a statement about being third highest, because this tax is only levied on the wholesale price of the fuel.
Yes.
That tax has to be 5.5% on the wholesale price. So if you don't know what the wholesale price is, you cannot make a statement about the total tax that's being charged. You cannot make that statement.
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, that's why I prefaced my comments by stating that they're predicated on the assumption of the previous testifier in his mathematical analysis of how a wholesale tax would subsequently manifest itself in the market as a per gallon tax.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. Senator Dibble?
I'll defer to Senator Jensen.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question revolves around that same concept. What I understood the
testifier to say is that it included freight. That council, can you help me? Are we charging against the freight? So those numbers that we just heard, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, the numbers we just heard included a tax, the 17 cents included freight costs that we're not going to tax for and we're not going to bill for. So that 17 cents is inaccurate just in that. So we would have to redo another calculation that goes off of what the actual just the gasoline wholesale price for that gas is, because that's what this bill does, not including the actual cost or margin or anything like that. They're not going to get charged on any of that. They're going to get charged for the wholesale price of the gasoline. So we need to know what that is before we can say at all what the increase is going to be. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Jensen. Senator Osmek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I understand the point of you have to be careful what number you're looking at. Now, I understand that we have a tax roughly between federal and state tax of 46.9 cents. Taking that off of the 325 that was sort of described, you get it down to about 275 a gallon. And based on that, it's the 15 cent a gallon tax. And of course, this is all fluctuating based on where the gas price is, and it is based on gross receipts. So I appreciate the fact that we're talking about how we're getting to that number. Actually, I would throw it back on the people who created the spreadsheet, because we've got a listing in here as far as what the costs are and what the revenue is. And I would say if we created a spreadsheet that's got the revenue numbers on it, somebody obviously used a wholesale price here someplace to come up with those numbers. So I think we have the numbers, because how would we not have come up with the numbers to start with? So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Osmek. Senator Westrom, you've been waiting patiently.
Madam Chair, let me clarify something. Ms. Johansson, you mentioned in reference to a House research document that gave you some of the information about what you were testifying to. Did I hear that correctly?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Johansson.
Senator Westrom, that's correct.
Is that a document you could get us as committee members, and can you restate for me what it was? When I heard you, I thought I heard that was a source of where they were indicating it would be third highest in the nation. Did I hear that wrong or not?
Ms. Johansson?
Madam Chair and Senator Westrom, that's correct. This is a House research short subjects one-pager written by Joel Michael entitled Survey of State and Local Gasoline Taxes. It was updated last in September of 2012. It cites the number that Senator Dibble previously noted, that we currently have a 28.5 cent gasoline tax, and then with the rough calculation asserting the number of the previous testifier, I am able to do that much mathematical analysis of adding 17 cents, which would have placed us right behind Connecticut and California. I think I understand also, I would add the points now of Senator Carlson and Senator Jensen, and would simply ask that, you know, if there is contention over what the potential pass-through of this tax would be, that discussion happen, because I do think it is a topic worth noting before adding a wholesale tax, to know what the impact would be potentially on a per-gallon level at a consumer level. But thank you for your question, Senator.
And Madam Chair, Ms.
Senator
Johansson and committee members, I think there we've just got the mathematics that Senator Carlson was looking for, according to the House document she was referring to. We can do the math in our head here, members, and I'll do it for us. Take $3 at 5.5 cents. We know that's over 15 cents, close to 16.5 cents. Add another quarter, and it's pretty logical that our testifier at 17.9 is right on the mark. So if you take the House document and the 17 cents or the 18 cents, whichever way you want to round, that does the math for us, and so I think it's meets the close, if not exact, test that our committee is looking for. But I think that information is accurate. But it does raise a question, Madam Chair, and I think Chairman Dibble might be the easiest. How and maybe we need this to hear from MnDOT, but how does this to the testifiers? Point of raising our rates at least near the top in the nation, where we're at exactly could fluctuate based on 325 or 350 or $3 or 275. But right now, truckers pay gas tax in our state, and as they record the miles they drive through our state, they have to pay enough gas tax to match the miles of our state, either through what they call an IFTA sticker nationally, as I recall, and there's kind of an agreement among states that they trade money back and forth to exchange a gas tax. If our gas tax is higher than another state and they drove more miles in another state, they can get a credit of our money and it goes to the other state. As I recall, commercial trucking policies and procedures. But Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, how will this work for trucking companies if our gas tax now is at 22.5 cents, if we lower it 6 cents, but we add 5.5% distributor tax, which raises the cost of our fuel? I'm inferring that the 5.5 cents has nothing to do with what they need to pay to our state for gas tax. Is that correct? Or would the 5.5% be part of what truckers would have to pay to our state for the miles they drive in our state?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll have Mr. Rozofsky help me if I'm not correct, but as I've stated previously, this is a tax enacted. I'll just read it. It's a tax imposed on the wholesale business of selling the means or substance used for propelling vehicles on the highways of the state. The tax is imposed at the rate of 5.5% of gross receipts derived by a distributor from the first sale at wholesale of gasoline, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, this is paid by the distributor based on their receipts.
And so, Mr. Chair.
Senator Questra.
I think your analysis is the same as mine, and I'm thinking of my small truck stop owner in Rothsay, Minnesota, about 40 minutes in across the border. I was raising concern to me about how fast and easy it is for the trucking public to fill in North Dakota or head through and get to Wisconsin, and he's always competing for those gas dollars and those gas fills and the meals and the food they might buy. But and hopefully somebody here is from MnDOT that can either can come up to the table and please correct me if I'm making this wrong analysis. But as I understand the trucking industry, and I've spent some time on it, they have to pay, as I said, gas tax for the miles they drive in our state. They have a lot of paperwork to do, and they have to file it quarterly and list they drove X number of 1,000 miles in our state, and they keep track of it as they cross lines and all this. But that receipt, lowering the gas tax would be what they have to pay on. But now if we add this additional new 5.5% gross receipts tax, which as a net offset raises our gas tax under the 325 scenario, 11 to 12 cents a gallon, now all of a sudden those truckers are going to be coming into Minnesota paying 11 to 12 cents a gallon more, but not getting 11 or 12 cents a gallon credit towards their gas tax paid in our state or another state. It appears to me that there's going to be a clear disincentive for them to stop. I know truck stop down in the Albert Lea area, just south of Senator Jensen's area, who was very, very concerned when we had the biodiesel blend requirement that was going to add 2 cents at the top end, 2 cents to the price of diesel fuel. And his testimony 10 years ago was they would absolutely drive through the state and get to Iowa or South Dakota or Wisconsin if there was that much differential in price. And now, as I figure this out, if we're going to raise the price 11 to 12 cents and now not even give them credit to use in other states towards lower gas tax states, my truck stop owner in Rosse is going to probably lose significant amount of business being that close to another border. If somebody from DOT can correct me if I've analyzed this wrong, I'd welcome that, but I believe this to be right, based on Senator Dibble, your interpretation, and as I understand how they collect gas tax from our trucking, owners.
Senator Westrom, we have a bit of a line of people wanting to testify and ask some questions right now. So if we can first go to Senator Miller, I don't know if you want to jump in here.
Yeah, I would like to jump in. Thank you, Madam Chair. And we have Mr. Toma up at the testifying table. I'd like to know, what is the wholesale cost of gas today, or current wholesale cost of fuel?
Mr. Toma.
Madam Chair, Senator, I did a quick calculation, and the approximate wholesale cost is $2.81. So I went through the same narrative that I did with the taxes on it. The 8,500 gallons at $2.81 comes out to $23,885. When you multiply that by the 5.5, you end up with $13.67. When you in turn divide that by the 8,500 gallons, you end up with 15.4 cents. And that's based on a wholesale average from rack prices around the state.
Thank you, Mr. Toma. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up. So freight is not included in that number?
Mr. Toma.
Madam Chair, Senator, that's correct. That would be the rack price with nothing attached to it, rack price only.
And then my question to Senate Counsel, and I believe this was already answered, Madam Chair, but just to confirm, a tanker truck going from the Twin Cities to Winona, obviously the freight is going to be much more than staying in the Twin Cities. So that freight, in my opinion, that's part of the wholesale cost, but according to Counsel, that is not included in that calculation. Is that correct?
Ms. Berezovsky.
Madam Chair and Senator Miller, the tax is on the receipts to the distributor, not the costs. Not the cost to the distributor, but the receipts to the distributor.
We have a new testifier at the table. If you'd please introduce yourself, welcome to the committee.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is John Houseladen, President of the Minnesota Trucking Association. And just on the IFTA issue, our read of the bill is that Minnesota would be a net loser because IFTAs calculate on cents per gallon. And so if you reduce the fuel tax, those revenues are reduced, but it's not captured through the gross receipts tax through the IFTA program. So something would need to be changed to address that.
Thank you. Senator Westrom.
Madam Chair, to the testifier, Mr. Houseladen, is my analysis of the trucking industry incorrect, do you know, or isn't that something you get into in your position with the Trucking Association?
Mr. Houseladen.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom. No, you're accurate. IFTA is a prorated system that nets out. So if you're a trucking company, you do want to get credit for where you travel because your fuel taxes are based on your miles where you travel. So a simple example would be if I traveled half my miles in Minnesota, half my miles in Wisconsin, I put it this way, and my fuel was all purchased in Wisconsin, half of it would be netted back to each state. So,
thank you, Mr. Houseladen. Senator Miller.
Thank you. I have one more question for the testifier that's leaving there from the Trucking Association. Sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very familiar with the trucking industry. We don't operate our own trucks in our scrap business, but we subcontract it out. And the trucking companies that we deal with are all over the Midwest. They're in the Dakotas, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota. My question to you is, do fuel prices matter for trucking companies? If fuel is 5 cents a gallon less or 10 cents a gallon less in Wisconsin, in La Crosse, Wisconsin, compared to Winona, Minnesota, are truckers going to fill up in La Crosse before they hit Minnesota? I mean, is that a big factor in the trucking industry?
Mr. Haslad.
Madam Chair, Senator, again, because of the IFTA program for trucking companies that regularly go between states, it nets out and generally takes care of itself. Now, there are some state-unique factors that do cause companies to avoid states. It's basically where you find the business and other fees that are added onto it. And I have to admit, this whole gross receipts tax and the impact on it is new to our – we're just trying to figure it out right now ourselves, so I can't speak with certainty to that. But what I can tell you is when you're deciding where you're going to go for business, you look at all the factors.
Thank you.
Senator Osmak.
Madam Chair, I'd like to just express appreciation for your indulgence and Senator Dibble's indulgence. This is a very, obviously, a very touchy subject with many people at the table, and I'd certainly like to not belabor the point any further because we've been here all for a very long day. Although we have another testifier, I'd certainly like to move to a vote as soon as possible.
Yes, we do. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you. My name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And I just wanted to add a couple more numbers, if I can, to the conversation here. I think, first of all, it's important to remember that this is not a new idea, that there are a number of other states that impose this kind of a fee. So it's something that other states do, trucking companies all over the country have to deal with. And I just wanted to point out a couple examples to put this into context a little bit. But, for instance, in Florida, there's a fuel sales tax that's imposed on each gallon of fuel sold in the state that is dedicated to their state transportation trust fund. In Nebraska, there's a 5% average wholesale price of fuel, 5% is taxes imposed on that on producers, suppliers, distributors, wholesalers, importers, and retailers of motor fuels. And all of those revenues are dedicated to their highway trust fund. In New Jersey, a petroleum products gross receipts tax of 2.75% is imposed on all companies engaged in refining and or distributing petroleum in their states. So there are a number of states that have this similar kind of fee that is imposed on top of, in most cases, a per gallon excise tax. And I think it's also really important just to point out the fact that the excise tax is kind of problematic, and that's why these states have moved towards this kind of a system. And Virginia is the latest state to move away from a per gallon fee and move towards more of a sales tax model. And I think it's important to, again, point out, with all of the needs that we have on our transportation system, our gas tax is declining. So if you look at the projections for fuel revenue from the February forecast that came out just a couple months ago, and you compare that to the November forecast from 2012, for the next 4 years, they looked at the revenue projections are down over $20 million per year. So we're going to lose $97 million in gas tax revenue compared to what we thought we were going to get in the next 4 years. And those projections may very well continue to go down with each new forecast. Cars are becoming more fuel efficient. Consumption is projected to go down in the future. And so if we don't do anything except, again, look at an incremental increase in the excise tax will never keep up with inflation. It will never keep up with the demands because of the fact that it's charged on a per-gallon basis. So moving towards this kind of a system that will allow the revenue to grow with inflation and grow with growth in the economy is the kind of long-term, sustainable answer that we need for dealing with the many needs on our transportation system. And again, as an example, a 5-cent increase in Minnesota's excise tax is projected to raise about $150 million a year. That has to be divided 62% to the Trunk Highway Fund, 29% to the CASA, and 9% to the MSA Fund. That means about $88 million for the state highway system per year in additional revenue. Divided by 8 MnDOT districts means $11 million more per year. And for counties, that's about $40-some million a year more divided by 87 counties. That's less than $500,000 a county. And we have huge transportation needs. We need hundreds of millions of dollars to do projects like Highway 14 and 23 and 169. So just doing an incremental increase in the excise tax will never allow us to finally do what we need to do on our transportation system. So we really want to applaud Senator Dibble and the approach that he has laid out in this legislation so that we can really find more of a long-term solution to this problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just make a couple of final points, unless, you know, I don't want to suppress anyone's points, so my point may or may not be a final point. By our calculation, this would come to, if in fact this is passed through the consumer, remember that's a business choice, like I said, somewhere between $0.07 and $0.075 per gallon. Don't want to go through the math, but that's about what the net result would be if it were to be passed through. Chamber testified about how we would be the third highest based on calculation that I dispute, but that doesn't take into account the 16 or so other states that also do this. So, again, apples and oranges, creating a kind of a false impression that I think we need to be very, very careful about. And then, I would just, finish with the points that Ms. Donahoe raised, which is, we have needs. Gas tax, as presently construed, declining, will continue to do so even if we were to raise a per gallon tax. This is a measure of reform that might allow us, some measure of growth, at least for the foreseeable.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll just make this quick. And I do applaud Senator Dibble as well. I actually like the sales tax approach better than the current approach, but I think we should, because I do think long-term it's more sustainable, but I do not like the, whether it's a 15-cent increase or 7-cent increase, whatever that is, because there's no doubt in my mind that it will be passed on to the consumer.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've just been doing a little bit of work, and we actually have a state law that says retailers have to sell gas at 8 cents above their cost. So if this becomes a part of their cost, there's no doubt that they have to pass this on to consumers. So it's not a question of if they will. It's by how much. And so I guess it all depends on the calculation that you believe. Do you believe the wholesaler and what he expects it to pass through as their cost or the 7.5 cents? Whether or not we make reform in how we get gas tax is one thing, but how we calculate it, how we pass it on and how transparent we are, I think is what's key here.
All right. Any additional questions or comments on the A23 amendment? Seeing none then, and roll call was requested. Will the clerk please take the roll?
Senator Dibble.
No.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Champion.
No.
Senator Franson.
No.
Senator Jensen.
No.
Senator Kent.
No.
Senator Kiffmeyer. Senator Miller.
Yes.
Senator Osmick.
Yes.
Senator Peterson.
Yes.
Senator Pratt.
Yes.
Senator Reinert.
No.
Senator Rest.
No.
Senator Senjum. Senator Tomasoni. Senator Westrum.
Yes.
Senator Wieger.
No.
With 5 votes in favor and 9 opposed, the motion does not carry. Additional questions, comments, amendments? Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me find it here. Members, page 36, line 27. So we're in Article 2, Section 10. I believe this is a proposal that my good friend Senator Peterson put forward. This would allow a county in outside of the metro area, so a county in Greater Minnesota, by resolution of county board, to impose a transportation sales tax of up to 0.5%, and an excise tax of $20 per motor vehicle, without going to the voters. To get approval by the voters, so we're striking the language. The taxes imposed under this section are subject to approval by a majority of the voters. I would like to offer an oral amendment to strike Section 10, Article 2, Section 10.
So that would be from line 36.27 through 37.5, is that?
37.4, yes, Madam Chair.
All right.
37.5.
Five with the effective date.
I'm sorry. Yes, yeah. You're correct. 37.5.
Okay. Any questions or comments on Senator Miller's oral amendment? Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would speak against the motion. Shocked, I know. But this is actually consistent with, with how I feel about these matters, and that's the local units of government. I mean, there is an accountability that we already have, and if the voters are not happy about the enactment of such a tax, they have the opportunity to express themselves at the next election for
Mr. Chair,
commissioners.
Senator Dibble, could you speak in the microphone a little more? I'm
sure
hearing bits and pieces of your.
Sorry, I would speak against this amendment. We have a measure of accountability already. Local elected officials are accountable to their own constituents, and so I don't think we need to add layers of accountability for local officials acting under their own authority with their own election certificate.
Okay. Any additional comments or questions on Senator Miller's oral amendment? Seeing none,
Madam
then?
Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call vote, please.
A roll
Actually,
call
no, I'll pull that. Just a roll
okay.
is fine.
Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
No. Motion does not prevail. Additional amendments or comments at this point? Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd offer the A22 amendment.
Senator Peterson offers the A22 amendment. In the interest of an hour getting late, you want to go ahead and start talking about it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is an amendment that you've heard something about in the past. It specifically relates to our statewide transportation improvement program. Whenever we need to replace a roadway that requires more than 2 inches of paving material thickness, we would ask the Department of Transportation to fix that with a pavement material that has a design life of at least 20 years, giving the residents of the state a longer life out of the roadway that's being repaired.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
So, Madam Chair, I spoke against this amendment when it was offered last week. The premise of my opposition was that, this might represent additional costs at the outset of construction. I know the argument is it saves dollars over time. I think MnDOT came to the table and expressed reluctance as well for a similar reason. Of course, we had a very different bill in front of us at that time. We have a different bill. If it were to pass, there would be additional revenue. So the marginal costs up front, could perhaps be supported now by the bill as we see it. I know that we're going to examine this issue in the coming year. The legislative auditor, I think that's been selected, but nevertheless. I'll leave it to the committee to to exercise their own individual judgment, but I'm favorably disposed to the A22 today.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Chair Kent. And Senator Dibble hit on the point I was going to make, and, you know, at least, and first of all, the Legislative Audit Commission did select the pavement improvement rehab process as one of the topics earlier this morning. You know, and at least for me, I'm going to let them do their thing, do their gig. And because this has been, for those of us that have been on transportation for a few years, it's an issue that is recurring. You know, and it's this. Is it better to do less expensive, shorter lifespan more often than the longer solution less often? And you know, I think the legislative auditor is going to give us some good information back. So with respect, I won't be able to support the amendment.
Additional questions or comments, members? Seeing none, then.
Madam Chair, may I request a roll call, please?
Senator Franson, roll call has been requested. The clerk, please take the roll.
Senator Dibble.
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Champion.
Yes.
Senator Franson.
No.
Senator Jensen.
Yes.
Senator Kent.
No.
Senator Kiffmeyer. Senator Miller. Senator Osmick.
No.
Senator Peterson.
Yes.
Senator Pratt.
Yes.
Senator Reinert.
No.
Senator Rest.
Yes.
Senator Senjum. Senator Tomasoni.
Yes.
Senator Westrum.
Yes.
Senator Wieger.
Yes.
I'll vote no. Miller votes no.
Excuse me. With 10 votes in favor and 5 votes opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, I have an A24 amendment.
Senator Tomasoni offers the A24 amendment.
Madam Chair, well, it's being passed out. Everybody's seen this before. This was the ignition interlock device bill that I had in here, and it was passed out to the floor. And I don't believe there's any opposition to this bill. What this does is it basically allows an employer and an employee, the employer being the person who is not on the ignition interlock and the employee being somebody who is on the ignition interlock, it allows the employee to give permission to the employee to drive his vehicles. And the department put a couple of amendments on the bill that made it really work really good. And so I don't think there's any opposition to this. And if people want me to refresh their memories with questions, I'll be happy to try and answer them.
Any questions on the A24 amendment? Comments? Senator Dibble?
sorry, I was slightly distracted. Yes. Madam Chair, I just need to be reminded, does this have a fiscal? I don't think this has a fiscal note, does it? No. Okay. So, Madam Chair, I think it's fine. You know, it's policy, but, you know, yeah. But I think we passed this unanimously in the committee previously, so.
Okay. Any additional questions or comments? Senator Tomasoni, any concluding remarks?
I'd like to move the amendment, ma'am.
Senator Tomasoni moves the A24 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A26 amendment.
Senator Pratt moves the A26 amendment. Senator Pratt, would you like to begin describing your amendment while we're having it distributed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the bill as amended this evening, two counties, Scott and Carver, are assessed a 3/4 cent sales tax. Neither county has joined CTIB, in part because neither has a designated transit way in their jurisdiction. Basically, the counties, the five counties that are in CTIB, get credit for that. They get a vote on the CTIB board. Scott and Carver would pay the same amount in sales tax and have no voice. Effectively, a 1/4 cent sales tax, and I can speak to Scott County, raises about $3 million. According to the bill, we would get about $1.5 million back with the 55% on the first 1/4 percent, and the other $7.5 million would flow out for greater projects. The idea here is that Scott and Carver County, from a transit perspective, look more like Greater Minnesota than they do the seven county metro area, and we have a number of projects that need to be taken on that will help transit and transportation in the metro area, just not as defined by CTIB and not as defined by the uses of the 3/4 cent sales tax. So my amendment would effectively redefine Carver and Scott County to the provisions that we just passed in Section 10 and allow the county board to establish a 1/2 cent sales tax for transportation purposes.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would be opposed to the amendment for a couple of different reasons. One is, the eligible funds, would deliver transit services, transit facilities, et cetera, to Scott and Carver County. They aren't without transit needs. Additionally, Scott, the residents of Scott and Carver County, we know today, based on, the fact that the current transit taxing district, the property tax that we pay for capital purposes to build, to buy buses, to build park and rides, et cetera, a lot of those users come from Scott and Carver County. We know that today. So we know that residents of Scott and Carver County will benefit greatly from the additional investments that will be available from this additional 1/2 cent or 3/4 cent sales tax. We guarantee a return on some of those dollars so that they're paid directly into Scott and Carver County for serving for building and serving those residents directly in those counties. But we also know that we're 1 7 county metropolitan area, and folks move around the metropolitan area. They enjoy the investments and the effort of folks in other parts of the metro as well, and so we're trying just to recognize the reality. We also know that in the not too distant future, Scott and Carver County, will have more folks. We have 1 million people moving to the metropolitan area in the next 10, 15 years or so. So, for those reasons, I think we should keep seven counties together, keep the tax uniform, recognize that for the next 5 years or so, we need to make sure we guarantee at least a minimum return for the effort that's made. And I think Scott and Carver County will reap the benefit.
Thank you. Additional questions or comments on the A26 amendment? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Dibble, I know we talked about this earlier. The fact of the matter is the investment coming from Met Council to Scott and Carver County doesn't match the amount that's going to be flowing out. We don't have residents crossing the river to pick up transit. We provide them transit today through our own Blue Express and Southwest bus. There are needs that we have. I mean, basically, we have a river that we have to cross, and having the flexibility to do that. I have no doubt at some point in time, both Scott and Carver County will join CTIB and become part of that board. But right now, the projects, the agreement just doesn't make sense because we look, from a transit perspective, from a transportation perspective, more like Greater Minnesota than the built-out infrastructure of the rest of the seven county metro area. We're new in growth. We continue to grow, and we really need the flexibility to be able to do the projects that will not only help the residents of Scott County and Carver County get across the rivers and do the transportation that they have, but also to help relieve some of the congestion that's going to be coming as some of our river bridges need replacement. So I would strongly encourage a yes vote, especially since neither county has a voice on the CTIB board. We are basically being taxed without the voice on the board, and I find that to be unfair.
Oh. Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, the Scott and Carver County will be on the board, and will have a voice and a vote. That's in the bill.
And Senator Dibble, is that part of the transition plan, and that would be taking place over the course of the rest of this year? Am I reading
correct.
That part right?
Yeah, that'll occur immediately.
Okay. Thank you. That was my concern about this issue, was the lack of representation. So thank you. Additional questions or comments on the A26 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A26, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion is not adopted.
Division.
Division is requested. Those in favor of the A26 amendment, please raise your hand. Those opposed, please raise your hand. With 8 opposed and 6 in favor, the motion is not adopted. Additional amendments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Osmond.
Just a quick question. Let's say hypothetically that this does go through conference committee. I'm sorry I didn't look more closely. When is this going to actually be enacted? When will we start actually collecting the 5.5% gross tax? Is that July 1st, October 1st? Why do I think it's July 1st?
Ms. Boyd or Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, it's October 1st, but then I think there's some delay. Is that correct in actually receiving the dollars?
Yeah.
Ms. Boyd?
Madam Chair and members, the effective date for both the gross receipt sales tax and the reduction of the gas tax is October 1st. However, since the gas tax is a monthly sort of collection, there will be 8 months of that reduction in fiscal year 14. The gross receipt sales tax is a quarterly tax, so between October and December, those receipts won't be booked until January. So it'll be 6 months of new revenue for fiscal year 14. So, sort of an odd first year for those.
Mm-hmm. Senator Osmond.
Madam Chair, just to be clear, though, that if we impose it effective October 1st, anything from October 1st on in time is actually going to be subject to that tax. Although we won't see the receipts until later. If I'll say it with the word hypothetical in front of me, that this is going to be passed on to the consumer, hypothetically, they're going to be starting to charge effective October 1st to recoup their costs. Hypothetically.
Ms. Boyd?
Madam Chair, non-hypothetically, the tax is in effect October 1st. Yes.
Okay.
Seeing no further amendments, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A-19 amendment.
Senator Pratt offers the A-19 amendment.
I'll go ahead and speak to this as it's being passed out.
Thank you.
The A-19 amendment basically recognizes the facts that were laid out before, that the gas tax is, in fact, declining, and recognizes that one of the reasons is we have a number of alternative fuel and hybrid vehicles that are using our roads and not paying their fair share of gas tax. So therefore, this would impose a $100 fee on electric vehicles and a $50 fee on hybrid vehicles in order to make up that difference. And that was roughly calculated at 10 gallons per week, with the assumption that on 52 weeks at approximately 20 cents, just for rounding. And so just to make sure that, you know, again, everyone who's using our roads pays their fair share, and this helps us get a little bit closer to that.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Any questions or comments on this? Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pratt, yeah, this is an interesting idea. I will argue that there is a little bit of mythology about, you know, whether or not owners of electric or hybrid vehicles, don't pay their fair share overall, or don't pay anything. I mean, there are arguments that they don't pay anything. They do, of course, pay motor vehicle sales tax. That's a little higher because there's a premium, as we know, on those vehicles, and they pay the registration tax as well as the license renewal tax. Again, a little higher. They also pay property taxes and all kinds of other taxes of general applicability, much of which goes to the transportation. There's the transportation functions of our local units of government as well as the state. This is an interesting idea. I'll leave it to the committee and committee members to decide individually. I probably need a little more time to think about it. I don't think I'll support the amendment myself, but again, I appreciate the idea, Senator Pratt. I want a little more time to think about it. Not necessarily hyper opposed to it, not quite ready to swallow it at this moment. But again, members, please vote as you see fit.
Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm pretty amused that Senator Pratt wants to raise fees here, but
me too.
putting that on the side. Does Senator Pratt, do you have a sense of how much revenue this would be generating, Senator Pratt?
Senator Franzen, no, I don't. I haven't gone through the math of that. Other than just as we've been talking about gas tax, about the need for having those use taxes be a part of this conversation, I don't expect this to be a big revenue generator. The idea is just talking about it from a fairness standpoint, that those vehicles that are using our roads and like every other vehicle owner paying property taxes, registration taxes, sales taxes on top, this is the one usage tax that they seem to not pay in an equitable amount. And so this is just, again, back of the envelope, trying to make that very equitable.
Senator Osmick. Oh, sorry. Senator Franzen, did you have a follow-up?
I do, but Madam Chair, just wanted to know if we have an idea from MnDOT how many vehicle registrations we have for hybrids. They might know, or they might have an idea.
Do we have any testifiers in the audience with knowledge of this? Oh, here comes Ms. McCormick. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Madam Chair and Senator Franzen. I don't have a number right with me. I think we've done some general estimates, but it's not that simple for us to do that because that isn't a number that we collect. But we may be able to give you some type of an estimate. I'm not sure. We'll see what we can get for the committee.
Thank you. Senator Osmick, you had a question?
To Senator Pratt, Madam Chair, so the federal government gives us on our federal tax forms a credit, a rebate, something. So this is sort of a way for us to actually tax back federal money you get as a rebate. Interesting concept. We're taxing the state's reverse taxing on the federal government, sort of. Thank you.
Senator Carlson, did you have a question?
Madam Chair and Senator Pratt, I kind of like the idea. I don't know that it's time for that at this point yet. And in fact, there are taxes that those folks do pay. They do pay if they have a plug-in hybrid or a plug-in electric car. They do pay sales tax on electricity, which is, of course, much lower. But they also pay additional tax on their license tab renewals because all electric vehicles are higher priced than an equivalent gasoline vehicle. So there is a higher price that is paid there. But I think eventually there will be something that we may have to do. I don't know that I like the idea of a flat fee per year, because there are a lot of people that don't drive their cars a lot will still have to pay the same rate as the people that drive a lot. So I'm going to have to vote no on your amendment, but I do kind of like it, and I really think we ought to have a roll call to get you on record of increasing the fee.
Is that a motion?
No, I'm not that mean.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Hi, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ethan Foley. I'm the Transportation Policy Director at Fresh Energy, a St. Paul-based nonprofit. Fresh Energy actually took a look at electric vehicles very comprehensively. We did that with Xcel Energy and a Ford dealer, the owner of a Ford dealership locally. And one of the things we talked about was, you know, how big is this question about electric vehicle drivers paying their fair share of transportation revenues? Because at Fresh Energy, we understand the importance of funding our transportation system. What we noticed right away is that currently, if someone purchases a Chevy Volt and uses that, and I don't have the analysis with me, but I'm very happy to share that with the members of the committee, they actually pay more in Minnesota taxes, road taxes, than the equivalent gasoline vehicle, the Chevy Cruze, in Minnesota. And that's because of the taxes that were alluded to earlier, higher motor vehicle sales tax, higher TAB renewals. And then they do pay a little bit into the in the gasoline that a Chevy Volt driver would likely use. And that is true also for the Nissan Leaf and others because of the premium prices. I'm happy to share that with the others, members of the committee. And I would also just say, echo the idea that this is a little bit premature. I think that this is a really important issue that we should be thinking about in the future. Right now, there are unfortunately only a couple hundred electric vehicles in Minnesota, so it's not quite yet an issue. The Electric Vehicle Owners Association of Minnesota has been interested in this topic and is interested in making sure that they're paying their fair share and very willing to do that. But I would urge a no vote on this because a flat fee as well wouldn't make sense at this time.
Thank you. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I'm wondering, friendly advice, that maybe there's some appetite to actually make this into a study and report back in a year what would be the right amount, and what are the numbers? Now, it sounds like we've just got a few hundred from the last testifier, but that number's probably increasing, and we had a Tesla Motors issue in the Jobs Committee earlier this year that they say they're probably coming into Minnesota to try to start selling more electric cars. So I'm just... Senator Pratt, if you're interested in the study, and Mr. Chair, if you think that's more palatable, I'm wondering if there's ever peace in the valley on something like that. But I don't want to ruin your amendment. Senator Pratt, you do what you want to do.
No, thank you, Senator Westrom. Senator Franzen, I'm all about solutions and trying to work across the aisle, so thank you for recognizing that. And I guess... Senator Westrom brings up a good point. If this is premature, Senator Dibble, I certainly appreciate that. I think the concept is there to recognize that we do have vehicles on the road that aren't paying what we've classified so far as a use tax. And Senator Carlson, they're paying, if our folks are going to start paying sales tax on gasoline, the 20 cents matches up with, pretty much what's left in the excise tax that's uncollected. That's how I got to the figure. So I'm trying to make it as apples to apples as possible. I'll go ahead and withdraw the amendment and suggest maybe that we take up a study, as Senator Westrom has so suggested.
So, Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator Pratt. I do appreciate the idea. Absolutely, if you want to shape up a study amendment somewhere down the path here that we're going with this bill, I would happily accept that.
Peace in the valley.
Peace in the valley.
The A-19 amendment has been withdrawn. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have an amendment, but before I jump into that, I do have a question for Senator Dibble. On page 41, section 17, subdivision 1, I noticed the change of from 10 to 5% in the capital costs of light rail transit or commuter rail projects. Can you explain why the change? I'm just thinking of Southwest Light Rail. I know that the county portion was 10%. How is this because we're expanding, we're getting more revenue, so hence we're lowering the contribution from counties and we're getting more people, more counties involved?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, and I'll ask my county friends to help me remember why we're doing this. But part of it was, to recognize some property tax relief. I know that some of our counties are bumping into their limits. The regional rail authorities are bumping into their limits of what they can contribute. We also know that we're going to be, we're going to have, more resources with which to work. Counties, the role of, I'll invite Commissioner McLaughlin to talk about what the role of the regional rail authorities have been traditionally. It's to do some of the very initial conceptualizing, planning, environmental studies, alternative analysis, feasibility, do some of the early organizing and coordinating and public outreach pieces. There are some reasons why we want to do some property tax relief. We're running into some limits. We want to be able to get these dollars to more projects.
Commissioner, welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Peter McLaughlin. I'm chair of the county's Transit Improvement Board and also chair of the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority. Madam Chair and Senator Franzen, Senator Dibble hit most of the high points, but I'll try to hit them again here to clarify. The counties on these rail projects, the role, the percentage that the county rail authorities have been contributing has been 10%, essentially since the central corridor. So on Southwest, it would have been a 10% share. This amendment would reduce that down to 5%. It comes from property taxes. That's the revenue source, primary revenue source for the Regional Railroad Authority. So this would reduce the property tax contribution, cut it in half, and the sales tax would be substituted for that in the pro forma for a particular line. Now, prior to the basic budget for these projects, there are some earlier investments that have to be made in preliminary studies that the federal government doesn't match, and there's oftentimes a right-of-way acquisition, and the rail authorities have participated in that as well, so that there is a continuing beyond the 5%. There are other contributions that the county rail authorities make on Southwest. That number is on the order of $25 million for Southwest that the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority has contributed. In Ramsey County, they are approaching their statutorily imposed limit on the rail authority's property tax with their current investment. So all of those combined with a desire to reduce the property tax contribution to these, and that's, I think, the impetus for the amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McLaughlin. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I will move forward with the amendment. It's the A-28 amendment.
Senator Franzen offers the A-28 amendment.
And it is, and I'll have an oral amendment to the amendment as well. It basically funds from the general funds safe routes to schools. I know that there's language in the current bill to expand the areas where the scope of the funds that could go to safe routes to schools, but we don't have any funding in this bill, so I'd like to move the A-28 amendment, which would appropriate, and my oral amendment is to change the $350,000 each year to $375,000. I know Senator Dibble has had some targets to meet, and he exceeded expectations by having some extra funds there, not that we have to spend all of our target, but I think this is, as you all here members have heard the testimony of the benefits of Safe Routes to Schools, I think it's a good program that we should fund from the general fund, at least keep it at play for potentially conference committee. I just think it should be part of this bill.
So do you want to incorporate your oral amendment into the overall amendment?
Yes, okay. So I move the 828 amendment as orally amended.
Thank you, Senator Franzen. Questions or comments? Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I accept this amendment.
That'll teach me to leave Bunny Lane around.
Madam Chair, how much more money is laying around?
I think this
Senator Dibble.
Ms. Boyd, do we know?
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble and Senator Osmek, as it stands with this amendment, the bill would be $250,000 under target. So $250,000 left in general fund.
Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, I do know someone's got an idea for $200,000 coming tomorrow on finance.
Hint. Okay. Any further questions or discussion on this amendment? Senator Franzen then moves the A28 amendment as amended. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted. Additional amendments, members?
Somebody's got $200,000 laying around.
Madam Chair, I had one drafted that I am not going to offer. If you had that in the queue there, it was a bill that we were going to take a stab at trying to reimburse Sherburne County for some of the subsidy for the North Star rail corridor, but I have a greater concern in terms of where those dollars would be coming from and the effect on greater Minnesota transportation, so I will not be offering that amendment.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. Members?
Right.
Senator Westrom.
I've got an oral amendment for $250,000.
I bet you do.
But I'll hold off right now.
Thank you for your spirit of cooperation.
Madam Chair.
Senator Osmek.
Just so we know we're going forward, I know we have a very lengthy list, and God knows we have a lot of time left in the day. I think
HHS was, 11 o'clock last night?
Yeah. I think we've heard from a lot of them. I'd certainly like to see the bill move forward, and unless somebody has a real heartburn, I'd certainly like to see it let's finish up.
Okay. All right. With that, do we want to move to testifiers?
That would be excellent.
All right. Well, we have a list here. If we could get people to come up three at a time.
2 minutes.
And keep it brief, please.
So,
you have a time?
So, Madam Chair, if I could just ask, it's 7:45.
Yes.
We've heard from
a number of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're happy to hear from folks, absolutely, but short, really, really short.
Recap.
We could. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, if I can repeat the chair of the Economic Development Committee, his advice to one testifier that was going to take 20 minutes and was asking for $1.5 million. It might just cost you $1.5 million if you take the full 20 minutes.
Good observation. Well, with that cautionary note, nobody's stepping up. So,
I only had
Senator
another
Rest?
One. If anybody has a provision in the tax bill.
I'm sorry.
Going once. Going twice.
Never mind.
I see Mr. Milner coming forward. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, members, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jacob Milner with the Minnesota Auto Dealer Association. I'll be very brief right here. I just wanted to raise concerns about the increase in the MVEST rates in this bill from the 6.5% to the 6.875%. I just wanted to remind the committee that Minnesota drivers are already paying significantly more money to register their cars in Minnesota than drivers in other upper Midwestern states. That is a concern for us. I also wanted to, impart upon the committee that for the first time in years now, auto sales are starting to increase again in Minnesota, and we believe that increasing the rate could put somewhat of a damper on those sales as well. So that's, I just wanted to get on the record as saying we have significant concerns about the MVEST rate in this bill. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Milner. Additional testimony at this time? All right.
Didn't mean to scare folks away from the table.
Yes, you did.
We're happy to hear from folks.
Welcome, Mr. McMahon. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott McMahon. I'm the Director of Government and Community Affairs of Minnesota Private College Council. We represent the 17 nonprofit liberal arts colleges in the state. It's not often that we have the opportunity to testify before the Transportation Committee, but I will keep my comments brief. We have some concerns with the Municipal Street Maintenance District proposal included on page 41 of the proposed bill. Article 10 of the state constitution in section 1 lays out the various properties in the state of Minnesota that are considered tax exempt. I won't read through all of them, but they're things like cemeteries, public schools, public hospitals, colleges, universities, churches, so on and so forth. Included in that section as well is a provision that allows municipalities to collect assessments for local improvements upon property benefited thereby without regard to cash valuation. So in order for a municipality to assess fees on a tax-exempt property according to the state constitution, it must be able to prove benefit that the project provides some sort of benefit to the property that is tax-exempt. The provision included starting on page 41 through 43 does not require within these districts for benefit to be proven in order for the fees to be assessed on nonprofit and tax-exempt properties. The provision does exclude what are known as the Subdivision 7 properties, which is based off of State Statute 272.02, which are the tax-exempt properties. These are the organizations that are your typical public charity type of organizations, your food shelves, your social service groups, so on and so forth. Subdivision 7 does not include all the various other properties that are highlighted in Article 10 of the state constitution. Things like the cemeteries, the schoolhouses, the hospitals, and the colleges and universities. We believe that the inclusion in tax-exempt properties and the assessment of fees on those properties without the inclusion of the benefit test is a violation of the state's constitution. We believe that that to bring this provision in compliance with the state constitution would require the exclusion of either all Article 10 organizations or all of the tax-exempt properties outlined in State Statute 272.02.
Thank you. We're just checking on something really quickly.
I don't know if that reference is in State Article 10.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon.
Madam Chair.
Senator Osmek.
One quick question. You included one classification, cemeteries?
Yes.
So this tax would tax the dead. I hate to make light of that.
So,
Senator Dibble.
Well, Madam Chair, I do know that cemeteries, I remember a particular cemetery in Minneapolis that kept asking us to build their sidewalk for them, and, that just wasn't going to happen. When those sorts of improvements are made, those sorts of properties are assessed.
And Madam Chair,
Senator,
I'd like a roll call vote, please.
You'd like a what?
Oh, I'm sorry. We're on the main bill.
Yes.
Main passage. Not on taxing the debt. Sorry.
I was like, are you making a motion?
Right.
It is getting late.
Wow.
Senator Dibble.
I have.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McMahon.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pratt.
Might I ask Ms. Berezovsky her thoughts on the testifier's comments?
Sorry, Ms. Berezovsky.
Madam Chair and Senator Pratt, I believe it's a fee and not it's structured as a fee and not a tax. But the testifier is correct that in terms of tax-exempt organizations, there are other categories besides institutions of public charity.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and I'm going to start on one end over there, if I may, just to keep it in order, and then we can try to keep this moving along, please. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Dave Van Hedem. I'm with Transit for Livable Communities.
You've heard from our coalition, Transit First, during our economy twice, so I can be very brief. Just want to share one poll number. We commissioned a poll in January. It said 91% of Minnesotans believe public transit is a good investment for the state. They know that because it's good for the economy, it's good for jobs, it's good for reducing congestion, and it really importantly gets everyone where they need to go in an affordable, healthy, and efficient manner. So we just want to enthusiastically support the bill as amended and thank the chair for his leadership in crafting a smart long-term transportation solution for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Haddam. Ms. Munyon, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, members, Sherry Munyon from the Minnesota Public Transit Association. Having been a critic the last time the bill was before you, I just want to again thank everyone for reconsidering, taking a look at the grave transit needs across the state, their significant investment in the metro area and in greater Minnesota, where we have been unable to move forward with the greater Minnesota transit plan. So thank you for the new bill.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce
yourself.
Thank
you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Justin Bell. I'm the Government Relations Director for the American Heart Association. I'm also here tonight on behalf of Minnesota for Healthy Kids Coalition, a statewide group of organizations committed to addressing childhood obesity through public policy change. Both groups are members of Transit for a Stronger Economy and strong supporters of both the Safe Routes to School and bike walk provisions in your bill. Our groups support a comprehensive approach to transportation that creates opportunities for Minnesotans to safely walk or bike to work and participate in any of their daily activities. We look forward to working with you to achieve a comprehensive transportation system in Minnesota that includes opportunities to safely bike and walk. We applaud your efforts in this bill, and we'd like to thank Senator Dibble and the committee for their leadership on these important policy priorities.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome, and please introduce yourself.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Houseladen, President of the Minnesota Trucking Association. First, thank you for Corridors of Commerce and recognizing the important role that freight plays in the state's economy. As it relates to gross receipts tax, you've gone through it in great detail. I would just ask, please give us a clear statutory definition. As we've done some research, taking a look in state statute, there are different definitions right now. And so whether taxes are being taxed or not, whether freight is included or not, is certainly a big factor in calculating what the true impact will be on our industry. So we would request that. And I would also go back to Senator Miller's concern about what the gross receipts tax might do to trucking companies. If the issue is not addressed, then trucking companies will avoid Minnesota because the base cost of the fuel will be increased. They won't be credit. Minnesota won't get that revenue. And there are ancillary services that take place at truck stops, like repairs and other purchases, that would not be captured. So we'd ask you to address that. And then lastly, as it relates to the motor vehicle sales tax, just to note that these are significant costs. And tractor-trailer, just the tractor itself, has grown from about $100,000 to $125,000 since 2007. So the vehicles are getting more expensive, more taxes coming in. So we really question the need to increase the rate from 6.5% to 6.875%. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Houseladen. Mr. Schroer?
Thank you very much. My name is Will Schroer. I'm the director for the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce and the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. And I add my thanks to all of you for keeping at this, addressing this important problem. Again, we've been here a couple of times, and I would just want to remind you of a couple of things. That the last time we were here for quite a while, there was a long list of concerns and needs, and we're here today to consider filling a way to fill those concerns and respond to those concerns and needs. And I just want to remind you that the two largest chambers of commerce, regional chambers of commerce in the state, have not only endorsed the fixing of those needs and concerns through the metro sales tax portion of this bill, but shown a willingness to pay for it as well. We join our citizens in supporting that. That we have polled on the metro and the greater Minnesota willingness to pay as additional sales tax in the metro. That polls extremely well, and urge you to take the action within whatever other aspects you need to address those needs with a tax that folks are willing to accept to get the projects that we need. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schroer. Mr. Reynoso,
thank
welcome
you, Madam
and
Chair.
Introduce yourself.
Edward Reynoso with Teamsters Joint Council 32. Let me start by thanking Senator Dibble. This is a bill that addresses so many issues that we believe that have been ignored and passed over for far too long. this proposal of first of all, by restructuring the method in which the gasoline tax is collected will address some serious deficiencies due to reduced consumption. This issue only would get worse before it got better. This change will provide increased revenue that is sorely needed to address a much-needed highway improvements at all levels. Also, your provision on transit tax provides a vision that is beneficial to our long-term transit planning for our region and will create thousands of construction jobs. Furthermore, it will assist in a strong transit-oriented development in our region that will help our economy by providing great jobs and growth in our neighborhoods and business communities. There are many aspects I could continue to talk positively about regarding this bill, but because, quite frankly, there are many in this bill. But I cannot go without expressing our adamant opposition to one provision of this bill, the maximum truck weight increase that this bill provides. Madam Chair and members of the committee, we expressed our opposition to this proposed legislation last week. We had what I believe to be a compelling argument that will not only, but I'm not going to beleaguer on, just continue to talk about those same issues, but to say that it is about public safety and the loss of jobs. As I stated in my prior testimony, we as the Teamsters Union are the largest union that represents these professionals that drive these trucks on a daily basis. Normally, when it comes to trucking issues, there's a regular crew of suspects that are either lobbying in favor or against trucking issues. The Teamsters Union, always at the table. The Minnesota Trucking Association, John Hausladen, him and I battle. Sometimes we work together on issues. Major freight companies such as UPS, Federal Express, Roadway, and others. In this case, you're proposing a substantial change to the safety of our roads and the entire industry based off the request of roughly a few aggregate companies and one lumber and home improvement company, Menards. These are modifications to the trucking industry that will affect our entire industry, period. Not just some of the industry. I'm talking about every truck that will be traveling on our state and local roads. Mind you, this weight change will do nothing but put these heavy trucks on our local county and state highway systems because they are prohibited from traveling on our federal highway system. These are the same roads that have been found dilapidated and in some cases include bridges that have been found to be structure critical. Let me finish by saying that while the safety issue is a serious issue, our final issue is about jobs. We will lose approximately 250 to 300 jobs in the aggregate industry. Basically, it comes down to one out of every three jobs. This is simply unacceptable to our members and their families. While we stand firm and offer strong support for this bill, we fall short of full support for those reasons. I thank you, Madam Chair, for the time. I thank you for the opportunity to address this body. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynoso. Are there additional testifiers? Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, my name is Fred Corrigan. I'm an executive director of the Aggregate Ready Mix Association. I just want to thank the committee for their support of the truck weights language. MnDOT has operated a 10-ton road system since 1991. The MnDOT, along with the industry and others, looked at a study over 2005-2006, made recommendations for these trucks, 6-axle, 90,000, and 7-axle, 97,000-pound trucks. As part of that recommendation, in 2008, the legislature passed a 10-ton road system and 9-ton road system in Minnesota. We would suggest to you that there are already 1,800 permits issued across the state for these trucks, and they've been on the highways since 2005, carrying agricultural and paper products and timber products with no evidence of the safety issues or deterioration of road and bridge infrastructure. We think it's time to move on with these recommendations, and we thank you for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Corrigan. Mr. Novak, welcome, and please introduce yourself.
Steve Novak from the Minnesota Intercounty Association. Four quick points. I want to thank the chair and the committee for revisiting the entire subject and coming back with a truly balanced and significant bill that would be a solution for a comprehensive transportation issue that faces us. Secondly, we appreciate the inclusion of the wheelage tax. It's an issue that's important to our organization. Third, the inclusion of the half-cent county transportation sales tax without referendum. And then just the final point, this bill does make a change in the distribution formula for the sales tax on leased vehicles, and we might want to visit with you more about that as time goes on. I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Novak. Ms. Bryduck.
Yes, Abby Bryduck with the Association of Minnesota Counties. The counties would like to thank the chair and staff for their tenacity in pulling something together this year and the creativity in finding this constitutionally dedicated source for some more road funding. We also appreciate the comprehensive nature of the bill, the statewide addressing of issues, all modes, all regions, and also the inclusion, of course, of the wheelage tax and the referendum removal for the local option sales tax for transportation and its extension to be used for transit purposes as well. This will give the locals some great tools to address their local road systems. And again, thank you.
Thank you. I think that concludes our list of testifiers. Thank everybody for your patience and contributions. With that, any more comments or questions briefly? Then with that, we will consider the A15 amendment. Oh, sorry, Senator West.
Madam Chair, real briefly, but to the trucking issue and my truck stop owner in Rothsay, Minnesota, I hope the chair, if this moves forward, that the gross receipts tax as is, we could look at an amendment. I'm not going to be able to support this bill today, but it is an issue I think would be something we need to look at. So truckers would get credit for all of that towards a gas tax paid in our state, so they could use that to offset other states, and we wouldn't have a disincentive for them to buy in our state, as Mr. Hauslodden expressed to the committee, and I'm interested in working on that language if this bill moves forward.
Thank you, Senator Westrum. Senator Dibble?
Well, Madam Chair, I'd like to think I was extremely brilliant and came up with this idea all by myself. But 16 other states have thought of this before us. So we will look to those states' best practices and glean even more good ideas. If these issues have been identified and addressed there, we'll try to do the same in here in Minnesota. Madam Chair, I think it's all been said, and more will be said at future points along the way, so I won't give a big speech. I'll just move Senate File 1173 as amended, be recommended to pass, and referred to full finance.
With that, the clerk will take the roll.
Chairman Dibble.
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Champion.
Yes.
Senator Franson.
Yes.
Senator Jensen.
Yes.
Senator Kent.
Yes.
Senator Kiffmeyer. Senator Miller.
No.
Senator Osmick.
No.
Senator Peterson.
Yes.
Senator Pratt.
No.
Senator Reinert.
Yes.
Senator Rest.
Yes.
Senator Senjum. Senator Tomasoni.
Yes.
Senator Westrum.
No.
Senator Wieger.
Yes.
With 11 votes in favor and 4 opposed, the motion is adopted.
So, Madam Chair, as last time, I want to thank members for excellent debate, excellent conversation. Very, very much appreciate everyone's participation and amendments and ideas. Thank the audience, everyone on all sides of this issue. I don't know if we're going to meet again anytime soon. Oh, I'm sorry. We have all those other bonding bills to get through. Never, I forgot about those. Yeah.
Can we please keep quiet?
So we'll meet on Monday to go over the bonding bills. And after that, we might have a number of those informational requests that we haven't gotten to. If folks are interested, we can still get to those. We do have the second half of the biennium to get to them too, though, so we might wait. We might have some random meetings for other purposes, but we'll have the bonding conversation on Monday. We'll finish that up. Thank you very much.
And with that, the meeting is adjourned.